Show.
Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and it is cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's Friday, and this must mean the front porch. Yep. Rocking chairs are rolling easy. The shade's good. The jug's handy. That big old zinc wash tub over there is just filled up with ice-cold long necks, up to their long necks in ice and rock salt for extra cool. Yep, it's a Friday evening on the front porch in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful, almost level West Virginia, and I'm mighty glad that you're here. Welcome. Welcome indeed. There are, you know how Front Porch Friday works, Friday on the front porch. This program is a blank slate. Anything you care to bring to the conversation, you are willing to bring. You lead, I'll follow. You drive, I'll ride. And I got some stuff of my own, too. So, sit back and relax. Do whatever it is you do to make Friday Friday. And let's see what we can find to cuss and discuss. How's that sound? For my purposes, you know, I try to theme things out a little bit and see just which way things are going to go. And I couldn't help but think that today, as far as getting things started here on the front porch, nothing would do better than racism on parade. Yes, fans, that's racism on parade. As we, oh my God. For pity's sakes, we have an abundance of it. They're out from behind their sheets. The hoods are off. And they're marching proudly, the racists of the repig-licking, evangelical right, marching proudly to the beat of a very, very, very white drummer. We can start with a little audio from a couple of days ago complaints during the Sonia Sotomayor hearings from, of course, Chief Senate Racist Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Hood, who was looking for a reason, trying to find something to sort of just pick, some sort of anything to give him something approaching a reason to vote against Sonia Sotomayor. And he declared that her testimony was muddled. You know, for a guy who talks like Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Third to complain that anybody's testimony is muddled, is, I believe, either high comedy or low farce. He said she lacked clarity. I do think Roberts and Alito are far superior in terms of answering questions crisply and with clarity and having very little inconsistencies in what they said. Crisp? Crisp, Senator Sessions? Really crisp? Like a crisply starched white sheet, Senator Sessions? Yeah. Much obliged to the Senate Democratic Leadership Office, compiled this, little compendium of crisp, clarity-laden answers from, the then nominees Alito and Roberts. Hey, Senator Sessions, I got your crisp and clear. Crisp and clear this.
I am disappointed that we still have a lot of muddled testimony and lack of clarity. Really, a person going on the Supreme Court
muddled,
should be
I say,
clearer,
muddled.
In my view. And I do think Roberts and Alito are far superior in terms of answering questions crisply and with clarity and having very little inconsistencies in what they said.
Senator, you've touched upon an area in Roberts. Which I cannot comment.
I don't want to say anything
Alito.
That anybody will characterize as an argument that I am making.
Again, of course, without commenting on any of the particular hypotheticals or actual cases.
I don't know how I can address that question.
It's an area where I think it's inappropriate for me to comment.
I'm reluctant to get into this.
I can't comment on those particulars.
Senator, I just don't think I should answer questions like that.
I don't think it's appropriate to comment on.
And I can't say that I can provide a clear answer.
I do not feel it appropriate for me to comment on. It would be inappropriate for me to comment on.
Senator, I don't want to say anything.
I think it's inappropriate to comment. Uncomfortable commenting on it. I don't want to comment. I'm not supposed to comment. Avoid commenting. I can't comment on. Without commenting, of course, without commenting.
Go ahead and continue not to answer.
Yeah. You know, when it comes to pasty-faced, doughy white guys, you can't beat the likes of Alito and Roberts for crispness and clarity. With bluing for extra whiteness. Yeah. I hate them. Oh, Lord, if they weren't so dangerous, they'd be so delightfully the comic. They would be, wouldn't they? But it is racism on parade, and it also includes... It includes Representative Todd Tyert of Kansas. What's the matter with Kansas? Well, Todd Tyert's part of what's the matter with Kansas. Todd Tyert has revived something that went down during the campaign that was so odious as to be absolutely vulgar. Todd Tyert, he's opposed to abortion. And in the course of the health care debate in the House of Representatives, Todd Tyert wants you to know, you know, how those people are and what they'll do if we have health care that includes everybody. I mean, you just don't want to contemplate it now, do you?
70% of Americans, according to polling data, oppose using public funds for abortions. So regardless of where you're at on the issue, certainly those folks, those 70% of Americans, need an opportunity for their voice to be heard on the floor of the House. They need an up or down plain vote on whether we're going to take public funds to provide abortions or not. If you think of it in human terms, there is a financial incentive that will be put in place, paid for by tax dollars, that will encourage women who are single parents, living below the poverty level.
Now, whoever would white guy Todd Tyert be thinking about within those parameters, you got to wonder.
The opportunity for a free abortion.
I say we put them in breakfast cereals. Free abortion with purchase. The free abortion with $25 fuel purchase. Free abortions for everybody, even the right wing guys. Free abortion. Yeah. We can't just have a nation of free abortions.
If you take that scenario and apply it to many of the great minds we have today, who would we have been deprived of?
Oh God, please. You know, I won't lie to you. I've heard this before, and it doesn't get any better. If you take that scenario and apply it to many of the great minds we have today, who would we have been deprived of? What's he going to do? Is he going to suggest that that hateful old beast Barbara Bush, who potty trained her little baby son George at gunpoint while clutching her freaking pearls, that she would have aborted little Georgie? You know, I mean, I wish when I think about George Bush, I wish abortion had been legal in this country when Babs was carrying him. But that's because I'm mean and rotten and hateful. Okay. Is he going to say that Ronald Reagan would have been aborted by his mommy? Or how about Gerald Ford? Because he didn't grow up rich now, did he? Dutch Reagan had to take a job in radio at, like, what were we told, 11 years old or something, calling minor league ball games or some such the fabulous dreck. Maybe we wouldn't have had, oh, I don't know, pick any, who wouldn't we have had? We wouldn't, well, it wouldn't bother him if we hadn't had Stephen Hawking. No, it ain't none of that.
Our president grew up in those similar...
Oh, no, he didn't. He did. Of course he did. He's a right-wing repiglet, and they go, you know, he's a dog returning to his own vomit. Of course he did.
Circumstances. If that financial incentive was in place, is it possible that his mother may have taken advantage of it?
Is it possible? Who's to say? See, this is an extension of that. We may have already aborted one, the baby that would have grown up and cured cancer. Not in a country controlled by right-wing medicine, we wouldn't have.
Clarence Thomas.
Oh! Strike two.
Supreme Court Justice. If those circumstances were in place, is it possible that we have been denied his great mind?
Okay, using great mind and Clarence Thomas in the same sentence is admittedly anachronistic, to say the least. A contradiction in terms, at the very most. But this is just an extension of that Bingo Billy Bennett argument. Well, if you want to get rid of all the crime in America, you just abort the black babies. Remember that? Look at the population of the United States. Look at the demographics. There's no way you can argue that the majority of abortions are had by persons of color. You just cannot make that argument. Not if you live in a world that's also inhabited by facts. Just like the great majority of people on welfare in this country are not persons of color. They're white just like Todd. You know, it's an ironic universe, and I think this argument had to be presented by a guy named Todd. Remember the Bill Murray character on Saturday Night Live? Todd! Yeah, Todd. It could only have been better if it had been offered by a guy named Biff. Yeah, racism on parade. But we ain't done. Zell Miller has a problem with Barack Obama. Zell Miller has given another one of his, you know, just sort of had some LSD on my Wheaties this morning and decided to start talking to right-wingers speeches. He addressed a group of Republican repig-licking legislators. In a downtown Atlanta ballroom, where he suddenly decided that the President of the United States has no business conducting foreign policy. You will remember that in the Constitution, the President is charged with the constitutional duty of negotiating treaties, right? I mean, just saying. After 8 years that involved, among other things, as we mentioned earlier this week, that involved George Bush flying off to India to strike a nukes for mangoes deal that apparently also yielded dill pickles and bread and butters, that was okay by Zell. Crazy as hell, Zell. Because Barack Obama needs to stay on the plantation. Here's the quote. God knows I wish I had audio. First of all, he, among other things, he said that the United States is currently printing money. This is a quote. Printing money like we are the Weimar Republic. That's always fun. I don't know. Maybe he saw a revival of Cabaret the night before or something. But then he said this. A globe-trotting president needs to stop and take a break. and quit gallivanting around. Rahm Emanuel needs to put Gorilla Glue on his chair to keep him in the Oval Office. You know, much more of this in the Republican Party, speaking of revivals, are just going to turn into a revival of Amos and Andy. Holy crap, Gorilla Glue? Is anybody proofreading? Is anybody vetting your speeches, Zell? Is anybody vetting any of the Republican speeches? Todd Tired, is there anybody in your office who said, Todd, might not be a good idea to no. No, there isn't. No, there isn't. The rump is getting rumpier. The Republican Party, which is a rump, just a rump party in the United States now, it is getting rumpier, and yet it still wields considerable power because there are people who play along with them, the so-called Blue Dog Democrats and the DLC types and, the Ben Nelsons and Mary Landrews and Blanche Lincolns and David Pryors of the world. Yuck. Gorilla Glue? Gorilla Glue? Come on. I'm so sick of this. You know, it seems to me that certain promises were made, at least to my generation, and certain promises were made to the generation ahead of me that were born at the close of the Second World War. This was going to be a nation that fulfilled its potential. We're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the landing on the moon and all that that heralded. And these bastards are dragging us backwards for all they're worth. And it's not just rhetorical stuff. There's a blog post over at Ken Ward's Coal Tattoo blog at wvgazette.com about the coal ash being schlepped to Perry County, Alabama, one of Alabama's poorest counties. Guess who they're going to dump the coal ash on? Here's a hint. It won't be going anywhere near... The neighborhoods of the likes of Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Foot or any of his pasty-faced cronies. God Almighty, when do we get a break? When's the second act? Because I'm real tired of the first one. And then finally, and I'm going to the phones because you guys are stacking them up. And go ahead, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your nickel, if you so choose, 304-658-3333. Then there's what went down last night on Rachel Maddow's program. Bless her heart. You know, you finally start getting a decent payday, and the trade-off is that you have to waste precious time on one of the few liberal, progressive-oriented programs on the television, given yakety-yak to an old, hateful, racist, bigoted, unrepentant Nixon follower like Pat Buchanan. And honest to God, Pat Buchanan is fast approaching his Jimmy the Greek moment. In fact, I think in this clip he may have passed it. Tell me what you think.
Hold on. I believe everybody should get a chance to excel and be on the United States Supreme Court. But if I look at the U.S. track team in the Olympics and they're all black folks, I don't automatically assume it's discrimination.
Oh, he didn't! But just like all the other ones that I said, oh, he didn't. He did. He most assuredly did. Isn't that his Jimmy the Greek moment? Well, you know, the black folk are faster because they come from Africa where they had to be, they was all the time being chased by them lions and tigers and cheetahs and so forth and had to squabble with the hyenas for a scrap of food. No, he really did. And here's the fun part. He'll be back. You got to give a little credit to CBS from back in the day that they did wave bye-bye to Jimmy the Greek after the Jimmy the Greek moment. You know, at least Don Imus got sat down for a while over the nappy-headed hose comment, but if it's Pat Buchanan, nah, he comes back. It's just Pat. That's just how they are. They're that hateful. It's not shocking when they say it because everybody understands. So we'll have him back. I remember once upon a time my father would get frustrated and look at something on the television and say, "Why don't you go out and get hit by a truck? Hey, Pat, why don't you go out and get hit by a truck?"
Say, I think maybe those are the fastest guys we got. That maybe they're the fastest guys in the country. Maybe they're the fastest in the world. If they're all our Olympic team in hockey is eight white guys from Minnesota, I don't assume discrimination. Why do you assume discrimination simply because you've got one component on the Supreme Court? Where's the genius you think who's a woman and a feminist who should or ought to be on that Supreme Court? Go for her. Don't go for an affirmative action person you know was picked because she's a Latina and because she's a woman.
Pat, when I look at the United States Supreme Court and I see 108 out of 110 white people, I see 108 out of 110 men, I don't look at that and think, God, white guys are naturally better at this type of work than the other people who aren't getting these jobs.
What
I don't think that way. I would love to hear your answer as to whether or not you think that is what explains it too. Because I think what the more obvious explanation is that you have to be a white guy in order to get considered for these jobs, and has been true since the dawn of time in this country.
No.
That's starting to break up now so that we can tap a bigger pool of talent. You should be happy about that for your country.
I do. I'm happy when you got all 78 firemen can take a test, but if all the guys that win in the test are all white guys and one is a Hispanic, I don't say automatically the test was fixed, biased, bigoted against black people, because I don't know that, Rachel, and those guys did well in that.
Yeah, because Pat doesn't know that racism ever existed in this country. Pat lives in this lily-white little world where the help has darker skin than him, but not his equals. I'm sure it eats him alive to be having his ass handed to him by a woman, and a gay one at that. He is that old English king, holding back the tides. And his white world is getting darker. It's getting darker, Pat. And there's not a God-blessed thing you can do about it. And it's making you insane.
Test, and they are victims of this evil affirmative action policy, which says, in effect, that everybody's covered by the 14th Amendment and the civil rights laws, unless you're a white male and your parents and ancestors came from Europe, then we can discriminate against you. That's what I am against.
Pat, are you happy that we've got a Latino on the Supreme Court for the first time, or we're about to? Does that seem like a positive thing for the country?
I think the Republicans had an outstanding Latino who had outstanding grades and was brilliant and was gutted, Miguel Estrada. I was all for him from the appellate court.
Let me just ask you the question before going to talk about some other Latino who's not a question here. Are you happy for the United States of America, for our prospects as a nation, that will be the best that we can be, that there is a Latino on the Supreme Court for the first time ever, that glass ceiling is broken? Do you see it as a positive thing?
If you say, be the best we can be, we're not being the best we can be with Sonia Sotomayor, and I think you know it.
Pat, I couldn't disagree with you more. I credit you to sticking to your guns. I think you're absolutely wrong about this, and I think that by advocating that the Republican Party try to stir up racial animus among white voters here,
I think they ought to do. They ought to defend the legitimate rights of white working class folks.
The last time I heard this, the last time I heard these words, the guy who was saying them
had a hood on.
Republican Party try to stir up racial animus among white voters here. You're really dating yourself.
I think they ought to do. They ought to.
Just listen. This is, like I got to tell you to listen. You tuned in. But this is stunning. It's 2009. The people who fought and bled and died in the civil rights movement are long cold in their graves. And this thing lives on.
Defend the legitimate rights of white working class folks who are the victims of discrimination because that's the right thing to do and because it's the politically right thing to do. It so happens that here that doing the right thing is the right political thing. Standing up for Frank Rickey, we saw the face of a victim of these policies.
What happened? What happened to that whole Republican thing about, well, dang it, we've turned this country into a nation of victims. But when you decide it's white folks that's victims, welcome to victimhood.
Rachel, you and your friends admire up there in New York, and you never look at these guys who are working class guys with their own dreams.
Pat,
just like Sonia Sayre.
I don't need a lecture from you about whether or not I know what working class.
You certainly do.
I really don't need a lecture from you about what I think about working class Americans or what anybody else in New York, including Sonia Sotomayor, who grew up in the Bronx, thinks about working class Americans.
Where
a lot of things divide us, Pat. Race is one of those things, but there's a lot of other ways in which we stratify as a country. And for you to privilege race and say that what we really need to make sure we tap politically is white people's racial grievances. You're playing with fire and you're dating yourself. You're living in the 1950s, Pat.
Wait, there's a little bit more.
I'm dating the 1960s when the Civil Rights Act was passed. Do you think Frank Rickey and those guys were treated justly when they were denied that promotion because they were white?
Pat Buchanan, MSNBC political analyst. I'm very sorry that we're out of time. It's nice to have you back on the show, Pat. Thanks.
I've enjoyed it.
I'm very sorry, Rachel, you had to waste the time on that sick old freak. So we'll take, I'm sorry, I gotta have a moment just to sort of clean my brain out. And then we'll get, come back and go right to the phones. If you're there, please stay there and we'll get to you. 877, the numeral 4, head on. 877-443-2366 is the number. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email to bobkincaid@gmail.com. It's just a hateful, toxic well that won't run dry, isn't it? These racists.
We skip the life and then go. Turns cartwheels across the floor. I was feeling kind of seasick.
at first just go sleep. Turn the wider shade off.
Memo to Rachel Maddow. Next time you have Pat Buchanan on the program, I suggest that you make this his theme song. Because you've got a plugged in, tuned in sort of audience that gets it and knows what the heck is going on. They'll know what's going on. You know, Pat won't recognize it because, you know, it wasn't performed by Hoagie Carmichael. But everybody else will get it. Whiter Shade of Pale, Procol Harum. I have no idea what that lyric is about. I think psychedelics are required to understand it, but it's pretty. But Pat Buchanan truly is. He truly is America's whiter shade of pale. My God. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Don't forget he said white men were 100% of the people that wrote the Constitution, 100% of the people that signed the Declaration of Independence, 100% of the people who died at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, and probably close to 100% of people who died at Normandy. This has been a country built basically by white folks. That's what Pat Buchanan said also. I mean, wow.
Breathtaking, isn't it? Well, you know, and why is it that it was white people did all that? Just why was that?
Not only that, but, excuse me, I think, you know, I mean, it's just a joke, you know. I mean, my great-grandmother was emancipated. I think she'd have something to say about that bullshit. Come on now. And he's a joke. I can't believe that she... Well, whatever. I guess she debated him, but yeah, it all sounded so painful. He's horrible.
Well, you know, I was cheating a little bit because I was running the audio off the video, and you know, they did it. I'm sure you've already seen it, but they did it with a split screen, and you can just see these little because she's trying to keep it together. You know, keep it together, Rachel. Keep it together. Got to keep it together. But you can see these little tiny ticks just sort of roll across her face like a tidal wave or something. We didn't. Because
no, but
she's wanting out of that chair real bad, Sandra. You can see it on her face.
Well, no, I mean, she, you know, but that's like you said, when you get a higher pay grade, that's what happens. You know what I mean? I mean, she handled it fine, but I have to say, the poor working class white folks, damn, they dragged him out nonstop. It's such a load.
Well, but if Pat's concerned about the poor work, that's... The poor working class white folks, you know what? Sonia Sotomayor is not going to negatively impact their lives nearly as much as what his Republican buddies are doing as far as, you know, labor rights, environment, so all of that.
Not only that, but they don't, it's the way they're going, the poor white working class, it's just going to be the white underclass real right about soon, right?
Yeah.
They're not going to be a class. They're just going to be part of the... slaves, you know, the re-slaving that's going on. I mean,
well, that's ultimate. That's the ultimate Repiglican dream, where we return to slavery, but we do it in a colorblind way, so that it's white folks being slaves and black folks being slaves and brown folks being slaves. You know, we want a slave class that's poor folks, and the Republicans are so non-racist that they're willing to let anybody into it,
yeah,
except them.
Well, you remember last time we spoke, the amount of people who were working for free, so that's not too far fit.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
And, you know, lest we forget, as I'm reminded by our buddy David in South Carolina, Pat was one of those people who worked with Kevin Phillips on the Nixon administration's Southern strategy.
No, no doubt. I mean, no, the guy is, the thing about Pat Buchanan is he is like a bona fide, straight up, racist. That's just all over TV in 2009, and it's just disgusting. Who were you talking about before, Jimmy the Greek? This bitch is far worse than Jimmy the Greek, and he on TV nonstop. So that goes to show you, you know, it's a bit of a rollback. You know what I mean?
Well, that's my whole point. You know, Jimmy the Greek said one thing once, and it was, "See ya, Greek."
Yeah, no, he was gone. I mean, it was just like, and cut.
And who was the, and you know, the other stuff. Who was the golf commentator that got walked?
Fuzzy Zeller. That mother. Yeah.
Well, but there was a commentator, a real just necker, who and a misogynist too. So who said what was it? He said women can't play golf as well because their breasts get in the way.
Oh no, I don't know. I was thinking about the one who was saying that Tiger need to go. Make sure he don't make none of that chicken and watermelon, you know, the first time he won the...
Masters, yeah.
Right, that guy. But he was a golfer. He wasn't a broadcaster.
No, but you know, Pat will be back.
No, he'll be back, but it's just... I mean, I appreciate Richard, you know, trying to date. Yeah, you're dating yourself, but he ain't got no shame. There's no shame. There's nothing to him. He's a straight-up racist. All his books are racist. He barely believes the Holocaust happens, right?
What? Yeah, and that's only on days that end in Y.
I'm just saying, this dude, I mean, he's like just, whereas Reverend Wright barely opened his mouth and got slammed back into next week, this fool continues year after year.
Well,
I almost spit out what I was drinking when you were talking about, well, if we abort all black babies. I know that's a different topic, but, you know, they all blend in.
Sure they do.
Who's talking about Obama's mother, and did they bring up Mr. Colt pubic hair too?
Mrs. Thomas would have aborted Clarence, and Barack's mama would have aborted Barack if only they'd had access to free abortions.
Right. That's why. And when you said, because as soon as you were talking about that, I said, "Oh, well, Bill Bennett and his, you know, what is up with these people?" You know what I mean? Saying that Obama's mother is going to... I mean, wow.
But she was a white lady. She'd have more class than that.
But no, but it's just sort of stunning. We don't get health care because what? The people might use it for abortion? Is that the argument?
Yeah. I don't know if that's the argument or if that's a fallback position that, well, you know, if we're going to have this, we got to make sure that there's no free abortions in it.
Well, as far as I can tell, they don't have to go that far because it looks like the Democrats are doing a good job of killing it. I saw Obama shuffle out trying to say this or another. I'm like, and cut. You know, he's not even saying that it needs to be voted on by August now. They got the whole idea in such a tailspin. These people needed the delay. Every time they delay something in Washington, the port comes out, you know?
I've got a good friend, Lorella Scarborough, down at Coal River Mountain Watch. And she's got this phrase that she uses whenever she realizes she's sort of run up against bureaucratic unwillingness to do anything. And that phrase is worth hanging on to, and because this is another case of it. Delay, delay, fail. And that's what this is. Oh, well,
but the thing is, I don't really think the Democrats, I mean, I suppose they think, well, the people are so overwrought because they don't have a job and, you know, everything's out of control that we'll just scuttle this and we won't have to suffer. But I think that they're going to pay a huge price if they come up with some BS where you can get a public option, what, next decade sometime?
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, just another case of delay, delay, fail. You know how much the Employee Free Choice Act means to me.
That was my next thing to you. I was like, did you hear that? Did they want to eliminate the main portion of the bill?
Yeah, and see, I'm one of a relatively select few, Sandra, because Guy James and I were in the room in January of 2009, the day after the inauguration, when Harry Reid looked me in the eye and said, "We will have a card check bill by summer." Well, now the card check bill ain't got no card check in it.
And no card check, and also, I mean, is it me or is that Andy Stern looking more and more like the business union types from Mussolini? I hate to keep going there.
No, that's been the rap on him forever and a daggum day.
I'm sorry. I'm like, you know, the whole fascist thing. It's like, you know what? What's up? What's going on? You see? You know, I'm just finding myself getting more and more inarticulate as the day goes on because I'm so pissed off. I'm like, what is happening?
Well, I'll tell you what's happening. This is from the cynicism department, okay?
Yeah.
It really is delay, delay, fail.
Yeah.
Because if we just keep the wrestling match going and make sure that the emails keep flying out to the big multi-thousand people email list. And sweet Jesus, send us $25 so we can run an ad against this or an ad against that. If we can just and if we can just keep the wrestling match going, keep the Kabuki Theater cranked up until December the 31st, then January the 1st, 2010 is going to come along, Sandra, and they're going to look up and say, well, you know, we can't do anything this year. It's election year.
Well, I know it's too much.
But hey, stupids, you better reelect us because then we're really going to show them.
Oh, no, it's such a joke, you know. I mean, since the juxtaposition of this, there's only two financial entities in this country left, Sachs and was it J.P. Morgan that came out with the massive profits? I mean, you look at that and you're like, oh, wait a minute. I don't understand. This is happening on this side, yet we're being told that any programs that will make life easier, you know, screw you. Because they completely moved away from the cram down. That's not even discussed. Have you noticed that?
Oh, no. That's so not no.
Right, but what's happening, though, is that the foreclosures are just, they're snowballing. And they're wondering, oh, why is this happening? Well, you bitches, you didn't allow the cram down is the only thing. It's the only thing that's going to force the lenders to do something. Otherwise, it's not profitable for them.
Well, God almighty, I read this before I came on the air, and I didn't commit the number to memory. How many foreclosures are we on track for this year?
1.5 million. I'll help you out with those numbers. 1.5 million.
And how many states have just topped out 10% unemployment? 16?
Like 16 to 20. But let me add one more little number to that, 1.5. Guess how many homeowners have been helped by Obama's volunteer modification bullshit? 43,000.
Well,
it's stunning, yet they sit on the sidelines when real teeth can be applied to these problems. Oh, you know, they have nothing to say. Where is Obama on the stump every day with the card check? Nothing to say. Where is he?
No, but wait. You're absolutely right. Where is he? Obama, Bueller.
But the thing is,
that Employee Free Choice Act, that was awful damn handy for getting the labor unions out on the stump for Barack Obama, wasn't it?
But the thing is it's just showing just how debilitated this system is because the people are not being represented, and it's just blatant now, you see? It's totally blatant, and I know, you know, this sort of stuff has existed since the Republic began, but, I mean, it's really unbelievable now because configuring this health care would be a boon to the economy. This is the thing. We're not talking about something that's going to be detrimental. I don't, you know, the whole taxing thing, too, they're going about that wrong, too. Of course it's going to fail if you just tax two people in this country, right?
Well, you kind of got to figure that it is. And here's another one that just sort of slid into my email box this morning, something that Dennis Kucinich has done in committee.
Oh, the state-by-state?
Yeah, the state-by-state single-payer plan.
Well, what he said was really scary was if they don't do this provision, they could just slam the door shut. You see, this is back to my opposite end of what we're really going to get, Bob, is being forced to buy private insurance that isn't obligated to do anything for us.
Well, exactly. But, the backstory on this is that Dennis got an amendment passed by the whole committee that allows states to do single-payer health care if they are so inclined to do so. But the real deep lowdown on it is how the thing happened, because at first he had this little teeny tiny contingent of progressive Democrats, you know, people like him and Raul Grijalva and a few others, and then a bunch of damn Republicans came on board with it because they looked up and went, oh, wait a minute, we're for states' rights. And so that's part of why that amendment passed. But the other side of it is, You know who the first and loudest no vote was on Kucinich's amendment?
What? Who?
George Miller. California.
Yeah, about to say, George Miller from California. Well, wow. I'm not surprised by that.
Well, I gotta admit, maybe I'm a little bit of a political naive, but I was. I mean, I really, really was. I expected better of him. And then the other side is that they are pushing for all they're worth on this, on the Republicans and the the insurance companies, let's put it that way. Are pushing for all they're worth on exactly what you said, an absolute ban on states being able to offer single-payer plans within the several states.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. And the thing is it's just, you know, it's just looking more and more like, well, yeah, sure, we'll welcome all the uninsured in. Come on over. And anyone who actually needs to use it will be flobbed off or left with a $10,000, like I said, you know, just not workable. And it'll be even worse, I think.
Well, it'll be worse because it's going to get, doing nothing gets worse. But what they have in store, yeah, that's worse still. And frankly, I expect it of them. I expect it of them because we've got all these, you know, we've got the Ben Nelsons of the world, you know, the dweeb. Oh, my God, it just Blanche Lincoln and David Pryor and Mary Landrieu and Joe Lieberman and.
Well, no, the thing is, I just don't understand what Obama is doing because he can turn his considerable rhetorical skills on, you know, telling black folks to be responsible. Oh, no, that's 24/7. But he can't turn around and do that every day for the health care bill, you know, and the union stuff. No, that's all. I just don't really understand. You know, he's not really using his bully pulpit very effectively. So it makes me wonder why not, you know.
I personally think that he's got people around him who don't want it done, and Rahm Emanuel is chief among them.
Well,
that guy's toxic. I mean, I cut slack, and I said, oh, look, you know, give him a chance. He's not going to be making policy. He's going to be the enforcer of policy. But I think he's making policy.
Oh, no, he's horrible, too, because, you know, when he was trying to get all these conservative, quote, Democrats running, how many of those people actually won? None of them. I mean, he's not even that good, as far as I can tell. I think he's a cancer. I'm sorry. I just popped my mind to Gorilla Glue. Hello. I don't mean to keep jumping around. It's just too much today for a Friday.
No, but the question is, if the president had been Hillary Clinton, and, you know, this is the test. If the president was Hillary Clinton and she was flying around and all this stuff was going on, would he be saying that Hillary Clinton's chief of staff needed to use some gorilla glue on Hillary? And the answer is no. And the answer is no because Hillary is white.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. No, it's just, it's unbelievable. I just can't believe the sort of comments that are coming out of these white folks. It's really stunning. Bad.
Well, you know, Juanita wrote in just a few minutes ago and said, "Doesn't it seem that the powers behind this hate talk have sent the word out to turn it on full blast?"
Well, it just seems to be just over the top too. I mean, I just, you know, to me they're just doing too much because nothing else is really getting done.
And delay, delay, fail.
And also, I'll let you go. I know there's probably other people, but and I know I'm late on this, but what was going on with Glenn Beck on the phone, the screaming?
Well, you know, that's what separates the men from the boys in talk radio. You know, if you really want to make those millions, you have to scream at a high pitched tone, and then they'll pay you off.
I've never heard.
I got to work
like
on my
that.
Screaming a little bit better because
I'm not about to say you need to come up with some sort of screeching or some madness. There's, you know, maybe the floodgates will open for the donations if you start screeching. That was unbelievable.
And again, he'll be back. Because this is living proof that I don't understand business in America, because that's good business.
Oh, and one other thing is they want to have a more humane don't ask, don't tell. What the hell is that?
Well, that's the one. See, that's I read that earlier today, and it just breaks my balls. Because the whole thing about that's so insidious about don't ask, don't tell is that unless somebody absolutely outs themselves, then anything surrounding it is guesswork. And you're guessing at sexuality. And you know, it's like that, you remember the Supreme Court case, Bowers versus Hardwick? The Georgia case where the Supreme Court upheld the Georgia sodomy statute because the cop had come in and saw that, you know. That's the only way you can find out. And so here's Robert Gates saying, you know, until we can get it changed, we're going to make sure that nobody's outing these gay guys in order to ruin a career or out of a spirit of vindictiveness. Well, that's the whole point. If, you know, it translates all the way down the line. The Kanawha County, West Virginia School Board just yesterday decided to accept, as in remove, from a diversity policy, a proscription on beating up kids in school because you think they're gay. Okay? And it's that you think they are. These fools with these hate crimes, saying, well, you know, we're going to have thought crime. We're going to prohibit thought crimes. Wow, we're creating thought crimes. Well, the real thought crime is when somebody in the military says, you know, I hate that guy. I hate my superior officer. I think I'm going to tell somebody he's queer.
Well, no, exactly. So there is no humanity to be associated with the whole endeavor. It's all, I just was like, just shocked and just disturbed by humane, don't ask, don't tell.
Well, it's a subjective standard.
But you know why I think it's so persistent? I may be wrong, but I think it's the level of religion that's running through the military.
Oh, God Almighty, yes.
I think that's the only, you know, because otherwise it doesn't make any sense. You know what I'm saying? It makes no sense that this is still being debated, except for the fact that all levels of the military is dominated by these Dominion freaks.
And we may yet not know how deeply that thing runs, Sandra, because the more that comes out about this C Street business, the more insidious it appears, because they deliberately operated in secrecy, because they didn't want people to know what was going on.
Well, yeah, but those people want to take over the world, right?
Yeah, and they got a big pile of rocks that they want to use on the likes of you and me.
Well, no, but they're really scary. That's that whole family, right? The family,
right.
That whole business.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and you know, and the thing is, though, when I see them giving out Bibles in Afghanistan, I think it's way deep. You know what I mean? Because that's an outrage.
It's not only an outrage; it's a violation of federal law.
Exactly. No, I mean it's a violation of law. Yeah, for sure. But the fact that it's so pervasive tells me all I need to know about why they can't allow gays to serve, you know? Because God's law is what's running the military, not...
Right, where...
law.
Yeah, because, you know, because it's not the United States Army, it's the United States Smiting Force.
Oh, my Lord, stop. Well, anyway, listen, I'll let you go, but I'll keep on listening.
Have a good weekend, Sandra, as good as you can.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye now. Yeah, okay, let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Blair.
Hey, Susan.
Care for some fun facts?
I'm just all over it.
Okay. Regarding dear old Pat, or as I call him, the pig, his quote was that 100% of the people who died at Gettysburg were white,
mm-hmm.
and close to 100% of the people who died at Normandy. Okay, I didn't look up Vicksburg. I was all pressed for time. Okay. I doubt if he's talking about at a minimum 198,000 African Americans who served at Gettysburg 22 of which won the Congressional Medal of Honor.
At Gettysburg alone?
Yes.
Wow. I mean, I knew that there were African Americans in the Union Army. I didn't know they were there in that kind of numbers at Gettysburg. But.
Army. On the 23rd of May. Wait a minute. It was at the Battle of Gettysburg.
Holy cow.
He was the first to receive that honor, but there were 21 other ones. And as far as Normandy, there were black soldiers at Normandy. There were black soldiers serving under old Blood and Guts Patton. There was a black tank corps.
And then, of course, there were the Tuskegee Airmen. But yeah. See, in Pat Buchanan's Lily White world, he's colorblind the wrong way because he just can't see folks who are any darker skinned than him. They don't exist.
The 761st Tank Corps, which served under Patton, they not only had to fight the Germans who killed them on sight. You know, none of this honorable capture shit. Pardon my language. They had to fight their own army.
Yeah.
Because, you see, it was still a segregated army.
Yeah, that wouldn't come until, who was it, Marshall integrated the armies under Truman?
Truman, yeah. So, like I said, Pat Buchanan is a pig. He's a racist pig.
Hard to disagree with you.
Now, I have a request of all of the boys and girls. First of all, my congressman, Congressman Wu, has come out and voted for a health care reform.
Yay.
However, I have happened to have we have two Democratic senators from Oregon, one of which, Senator Merkley, the junior, he is on board for single payer.
Yay.
The senior senator.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got a problem, don't you?
Yeah, he's normally a good guy.
Ron Wyden.
Yeah, he is turning out to be something of a DLCer. So if you would go to his website and type in a little email saying, get with the program here, and you have to use a zip code to be able to use it, but you can just type in 97051. That's St. Helens. And just send that off. We can maybe jar him off his...
This is all, again, that phrase, I think it may be tonight's theme. Delay, fail. Seeking a delay...
I don't know what his problem is. Well, I know, I do know what his problem is. He has been pushing this particular plan for years. Then in comes Obama and gets behind a health care reform in a big way, but they're not following his goody. So I think Ron's got his nose out of joint. They aren't using his plan. Now, I don't know how much money he's taken from the health care organizations, from the insurance companies. I have no idea. But I do know that people need to call in. I'm calling him every day. It wouldn't hurt. Hey, you don't necessarily have to be from Oregon to call. Just call in, give your name, say, you know, put me down for being, you know, single payer or a strong public option. Thank you. Have a nice day. Hang up.
Well, here's the text of the letter that Senator Wyden signed on to in conjunction with the rest of the freaks. Dear Senators Reed and McConnell, in the current debate about our health care system, we are firmly committed to enactment of comprehensive reform this year. That reform must reduce premiums and administrative costs expand choices, and increase coverage for all Americans. We are eager to work constructively with Senate leadership and agree that this is an historic opportunity, which makes it imperative to proceed thoughtfully and responsibly. Our efforts will affect virtually every American. The American people expect us to adopt comprehensive health reform that addresses the priorities we have outlined without detrimentally affecting those who have health insurance or increasing the national debt. This week, Congressional Budget Office Director Doug Elmendorf testified that the currently introduced health reform bills will not reduce costs. We are faced with the dual challenges of pressing ahead to pass legislation by the end of the year and to produce the reform the American people need. We appreciate the work that has been done by senators on the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions and Finance Committees. But in view of the budget director's statement, there is much heavy lifting ahead. We support the efforts of Finance Committee members to produce a bipartisan bill, despite calls from both sides of the aisle to rush forward or delay indefinitely. While we are committed to providing relief for American families as quickly as possible, we believe taking additional time to achieve a bipartisan result is critical for legislation that affects 17% of our economy and every individual in the U.S. We look forward to working with you to develop legislation that is vital to the well-being of the American people and urge you to resist timelines which prevent us from achieving the best result. This opportunity is rare, and the impact will last for generations. Sincerely, E. Benjamin Nelson, Neo Maxi Zoom Dweeby, Olympia Snow, Joseph I. Lieberman, Susan Collins, Mary Landrieu, and Ron Wyden. Now, if ever there has been an individual who is out, I mean, this is Sesame Street stuff. This is one of these things is not like the others. One of these things does not belong.
Yeah.
Ron Wyden's name does not belong on that in that crowd. Frankly, I wouldn't. Nelson, Lieberman, Landrieu, Snow, and Collins, I wouldn't trust any of them with a dead skunk.
I have already called him up and informed him how disappointed I am in him. I've also informed him if he continues his actions, I will be working actively against him. And I've included prediction.
But how did they strong-arm him? How did they strong-arm him into this, Susan?
I honestly don't know.
I met the man last January, guys. The guy and I stood and talked to him for a few minutes in the hallway. He seemed genuine. He seemed earnest. He seemed likable. He seemed, above all, intelligent. And he gets roped in with this gang of mugwumps?
Yeah, that's what I don't understand.
Well, it begs a response. It begs an explanation. I mean, I suppose this letter is supposed to be the explanation, but the letter is nothing but a bunch of blither.
Yeah, it's basically, yeah, because I've read the help bill, and I've read his plan. And basically, his plan is Massachusetts. With very, very few changes. Now, you've read about what's happening in Massachusetts.
You mean with their health plan? Yes.
Yeah. Bad. Really, really bad. Not good at all.
And the fact of the matter is, that's the whole point. It's that compulsive coverage thing. And frankly, that's not single payer. No matter how much Glenn Beck screamed the other night, it's not single payer.
Yeah, because you can mandate coverage all you want, but if you do not have the money for it, or if you can... Even if, like, okay, I was covered before I was put on disability. I had to wait over a year on a waiting list, but I was covered under through a state insurance pool for state-subsidized insurance, health insurance. And they paid most, the state paid most of my insurance premiums. The thing is, the deductible was so high, I didn't dare get sick. I couldn't afford to buy my medications because the deductible was so damn high.
It was like no coverage at all.
Exactly. And that's what they're finding in Massachusetts. You can mandate all you want, but what you get is this crap piece of insurance. And the insurance company rakes in the money.
And laughs all the way to the bank.
Exactly.
As long as there is an avaricious motive inside the, as relating to the sickness, illness, misery, agony, and death of human beings, the avarice will out, Susan. It will. It just will.
Exactly. That's why I'm begging people. Call Ronald Wyden's office. Call Bacchus's office. Call Pelosi's office. Call Reid's office. I don't just stick with my delegation. I'm calling people all over the place. If you're calling Reid or Pelosi, you say, I'm calling in their capacity as Democratic leadership. They got to take it, Dan. Be very polite. Be very brief. Say, here's what I'm after. Da, 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 da. I always include that, the prediction. You give us reformed health care, true reform. Democrats can write their own ticket for at least the next generation. If you screw it up like the Republicans screwed up Part D,
you will be a name.
Massacre of heroic proportions at the ballot box come 2010.
And why they don't understand that, I do not know, Susan. I do not know.
I don't know it either, but I keep telling them, the American electorate's in an ugly mood.
I know. Susan, thank you very much, and have a wonderful weekend.
You too, and give my love to Agnes.
I sure will. Our best to Donald.
And all the other kids.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan, imploring you to get after this. And I'll keep an eye out. You keep an eye out, too, and let me know. Shoot me an email if you see any kind of expanded explanation for Ron Wyden, why he wants to be seen in the company of a bunch of phonies and a bunch of corporatists. Because I would darn sure like to have that explanation. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Brother Luke, how you doing?
Oh, well, actually, it's just amazing to listen to some of this stuff on this health care thing. We've got Fox News out there saying that giving out every ounce of false information they can. You know, essentially telling people you're going to be lined up and you have to take health care. You know, and you have a country where, you know what, I can get you $1 trillion for a good weapons program. How do you probably breaking a sweat?
Oh,
you know what I mean? But by golly,
the bill will barely touch the desk in committee before it's out to the full. Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you want to get the new whatever the next generation F-22 is or whatever, they'll sign anything if you tell them it's for a weapon. Like, oh, we're gonna make people healthy or we're gonna help people. No. I mean, think of it. Start with, you don't have people going to the emergency room every 5 minutes. For simple things. You know, here you'd have small businesses, which are always complaining about health care costs. I mean, and even labor unions, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, with contracts and stuff, that's half their problem anymore is keeping up with health care costs.
Sure it is. You're absolutely right.
But how many different things it touches? You know what I mean? I did enjoy the other day. Who was it?
But yeah, well, I was gonna say, do you know how insane these right wingers have gotten now? Because they really are, but they're ahead of us in many ways because they're messaging this hard, and they have an entire network that will put out their view and pretend that the other side doesn't even exist. You know, Fox.
Oh yeah.
They got this clown by the name of Dr. Robert Goldberg. Okay. And he's from an AstroTurf organization called the Center for Medicine in the Public Interest. Gosh, doesn't that sound like a really good organization? Doesn't that sound like an organization that just really cares about you, Luke?
Oh, yeah. Just help me right into the grave.
They want to make sure, the Center for Medicine in the Public Interest, they want to make sure that everybody understands that if we have some sort of public option or, God forbid, universal plan, that we're all going to die. Okay? Just check this out for a minute. This is from this morning on the Phony News Network.
You mentioned Germany. Let me just jump in for a second. You mentioned Germany because the research showed that that's another country that has this sort of omnipotent board that decides what's cost-effective and what's not. And they say that in the past 12 months there, the 15, count them, just 15 medical products and services that have actually cleared the process, been stamped, okay, cost-effective, spent an average of 35 months under review. So before people could get access to it, it was 35 months of bureaucrats sitting there deciding whether the blue pill or the red pill was the most effective.
Well, and it gets even worse. I don't know if you've seen the movie Bruno, but there's a scene there where Sacha Baron Cohen invites Paula Abdul to be interviewed on chairs made out of Mexicans. And that's exactly what the Obama or the congressional plan does. It tries to balance the budget, the expansion of this new entitlement on the backs of people.
You ready to scream? I'm ready to scream.
Oh, well, you know, as I said, we don't have anybody out there reminding people about a handful of drugs over the last few years that had to be pulled back because the Bush administration fast-tracked them out into the public. And, oh, by the way, it has a few side effects just because you might drop dead of it or you might become suicidal or homicidal.
Yeah, but
I want somebody watching over it, make sure it tests the drug. I'm sorry. I mean, you know, if you got people that are on the, you know, in the emergency room or in the hospice, okay.
But don't you love the subtext? Don't you love the subtext of that, Luke? Oh. Universal health care will make you flamboyantly gay.
Well, the one I like,
Bruno, the movie.
Bruno, I'm sitting there going, Bruno, you're using Bruno as an example. Oh God.
And you know, yesterday I had occasion to see a little bit of Fox, and they had who was it? I think he's some senator from Wyoming or some such, and he's another one of those right-wing doctors that they ran for office and got in. And he's the former president of the Physician Broadcasters Association. And he was there to tell all the Fox loyalists that, you know, what? Anything short of avaricious health care, you know, corporatized health care, anything short of that is going to eat your mama.
Well, somebody the other day, and I don't remember who it was, I saw the picture, I can't think of who it was. John McCain opened his big yap and talked about socialized medicine. And they turned right around and asked him, he said, so you want to close the VA?
Oh, what kind of a response did that get?
He didn't say a whole lot. Kind of changed the subject.
Yeah, because that's just not going to play real good.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, you know, we're I don't think we'll ever get single payer the way we think we will. You know what I mean? To me, public option's fine because that will make the insurance companies say, here's the base. We've got to meet that base. If we don't meet that base, you know, people are just going to say bye and walk over to the public option. Now, and they know they're overcharging. You and I talked about, you know, how the pharma companies, they spend half their money on advertising. Quit advertising. The doctors will know what it is. You don't have to run commercials on cable and all the TV channels.
You know, I'm sure they focus grouped it and everything. You know, Diane and I talked a little bit last night about, you know, marketing is everything. I'm sure they focus, you know, how many people really do go in, ask your doctor about
the purple pill? Yes. You know, it's one of those things. The one that really blew my mind a few years ago was, you know, that amazingly enough, insurance companies will pay for this stuff called Viagra. But that morning after pill, no,
that ain't happening. No. Or birth control, yeah, no.
Well, and the other one that got to me was this thing about apparently some of them were getting Harry Reid to jump on the groups like MoveOn It's like, look, politicians have told us for years, make us do what you want us to do. MoveOn was doing that. You know, they're saying, here are these people who are saying no. And if they're Blue Dog Democrats, fine. They need to have their picture shown and said, hey, this person stands in the way of health care. In 2010, let's see what happens to a few of them. And if you don't want to, that's fine. Make your case. If the people believe you, that's fine. But MoveOn should be out there showing the picture and saying, here's the person standing in the way of you getting a thing, of you getting a public option. I mean, if this thing gets watered down, if your little group of six that you mentioned there, they ought to be buying cable time on anything they can, running pictures and saying, here's the reason you can't get health care. You know. Oh, switch over to another subject.
Okay.
We're just having so much fun down here watching our boy Zach. Oh, he's just.
Oh, Zach Womp.
He got his best thing happened this week was the fact that Rachel Maddow got in a fight with Pat Buchanan, so it took the bullseye off of his butt. You know, for about 2-3 days, she was just riding him up one side and down the other.
Yeah, it's the Jerry Clower factor. The Southern folks will understand that. Yeah. Knock him out, John, but I might hit you. Somebody up here got to get some relief. Zach Womp got some relief.
Well, the fun part is that if you're not from around this area, you won't know it. You know, Zach is wanting to run for governor, and Zach is raising his money. And the fellow here that's our mayor in our town is a fellow named Jim Haslam. And if you've ever been down this way, he's one of the family with the Pilot Oil Company.
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar with Pilot.
Okay. Well, that's the Haslam family. And he's outraised Zach 3-1 right now.
That can't be playing well.
Oh, but this way, every time you see an article, they're trying to play it down. No, it's not that important. But
only politics. Money's not important in politics. No.
And one thing about Zach's seat that most people don't think of, because they don't really advertise it a whole lot, the important thing about Zach Womp's congressional seat more than anything else is there's a town in Zach Womp's congressional district. It's called Oak Ridge.
Oh, well, yes, there is, isn't there?
Now, if you want to know where a whole bunch of government money goes, that's one of them. And I think it's, you know, I believe it's been good money spent, but you got to wonder, you know, with that much money, where all that money's getting spread around to. You know what I mean? Because they talk in big money when they talk Oak Ridge.
Yeah, folding cash.
Oh, yeah. Jed Clampett money, you know. Walking around money, you know how that is.
But Zach Womp is, of course, a fiscal conservative.
Oh, well, like I say, fiscal is fine. The conservative I'm wondering about, like I say, with all this fun stuff coming out on C Street. This could be a new reality show, you know, the way this is. Oh gosh, it's like, you know, it's like we were talking. You were talking a minute ago. You know, this is where not just the Dominionists, but some of these groups, like you were talking a minute ago about in the military. I tell you, somebody you might want to have on again. I know you've had him on before. You might want to call Mikey Weinstein.
Not a bad idea at all.
And see how it's been going, because I know, you know. Some of you can't keep up with everything, you know what I mean? And he's been somebody that's been on the front of that, watching how the military is being eaten by the evangelicals. You know, now we have to pass out Bibles and we're killing people. Here, have a Bible.
Yeah, now stand still while I shoot you.
Yeah. Hold the Bible up so I got a good target. Come on. But you know what I mean? It's one of those things where, you know, somebody in the military now, like I say, there's a whole bunch of older. My brother was in the military, and he left because of that. You know what I mean? My brother was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, and he got out because he didn't like the way a bunch of that was going. You know, he just said, I don't want to deal with this. Said, the higher you go, the worse it's getting.
God Almighty.
You know, you'd have people that wouldn't say it, but they're letting you know.
Yeah.
That you have to do certain things.
Well, yeah, and of course, Mikey did a very good job cataloging all of that stuff out at the Air Force Academy.
And don't think that it's just the Air Force Academy, because you got to know that's happening at the Naval Academy and the Army, and you know, and I'm sure probably even at the Coast Guard Academy, where they're putting their people up in the big places in the Pentagon over that bad 8 years we won't talk about. I'm sure move some people around that left hand and right hand weren't paying attention to what each other were doing. And there's probably some people's been put in place up there that should be taken out and said, time for you to retire.
Not a bad idea at all.
Happen, but you like, you know, it's like the whole thing with the don't ask, don't tell. You know, it's like say, look, reasonable people say this is wrong. Quit doing this. And they're going, well, we don't have to be reasonable. We're the Army.
Military intelligence. Yes.
Largest oxymoron there is. But, it's just sometimes on this stuff on health care, you're just sitting there. And it's like I said, last night I was listening on one of the, I think it's on Oberman's show, said the key to it is, said you've got to have this done by the end of the year because next year they're going into election mode.
Oh, nothing. As of December 31st, everything shuts down. And the year 2010, Luke, is going to be nothing but flag burning amendments, mm-hmm. and flag pin amendments, and God, you know, saying prayer in school amendments. Oh, it's already ramping up.
I was going to mention about anti-abortion, and you saw whose ugly head rose up at the Judge Sotomayor's hearings. Who was outside protesting? Randall Terry.
Oh, yes, he was, wasn't he?
Yeah. You know, he's one of them people, if I say, I still think he's one of them people, you know, I'd love to just sometime just see what the FBI file on him reads like. It's got to be better than a good Harold Robbins novel.
let's see. The Porn Birds.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? It's one of these things.
I had to reach for that one, Luke. I gotta give me a little help here.
I know.
That's good, The Porn Birds.
Hey.
A story of Republican lust.
No, let's not, because then we'll have to go into all the different ones, you know, the Scooter Libby book and Bill O'Reilly book.
Oh, and by the way, another point with regard to Zach Womp. Your fellow Tennessean David has written in and said, the other nice finger in Zach Womp's eye, half the national news readers are pronouncing his name with a short A, like the interstate on WAMP.
WAMP.
Yeah. That's a beautiful...
the thing is, he looks kind of odd, but boy, when he talks, God, he's got an accent that just, oh, God.
And that from us folks that's got accents, no less.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is he in the running with Senator Sessions?
Oh, I tell you what, you know, Beauregard Sessions, yes, indeed. It's like say I'm still wondering if they're going to have congressional hearings just asking what he meant about that damn cocaine comment. Do we need to come over and take a look around your place?
Yeah, I got to get some stuff fixed here so that I can have that clip forevermore.
Oh, that's one of them ones that you put on the permanent, you know, just sort of like go. Yes, I don't care what it is. I'll play this every once in a while.
We're going to do that cocaine thing, that crack cocaine thing.
Well, then we have Zell, who crawls out from under wherever he's been sleeping.
Gorilla glue.
Gorilla glue. I mean, we know what there is a thing called that.
Well, yeah, there is.
It's one of those high epoxy glues, but it's like you couldn't have thought just say super glue. I mean, you know.
No, but Zell being Zell. For instance, you know, like I said, the Hillary test, if it had been Hillary, he would have said, you know, Chief of Staff needs to nail her skirt to the seat.
Yeah. It's like I say, we need to get him and Chris Matthews in a room and let them just finally finish it up, you know?
Steel cage death match, right? Yeah, that could be the what do they call it in boxing? That could be the up card fight.
Oh, yeah.
Steel cage death match between Chris Matthews and Zell Miller, followed by the steel cage death match between Rick Goodhair Perry and Kay Bailey Hutchison. Yeah.
Oh, well, the one I've enjoyed this week is was Russia's comments about good old Big Ed.
Oh, he took on Big Ed, did he?
Since he was trying to call him Mr. Ed.
Okay, I got to say, I got some appreciation for that, but never mind.
I understand that, but you know what I mean? But it's gotten to that point you ought to look at some of the stuff maybe over at Media Matters. where they're going at it. They've been going at it a bit.
You know, I'm usually there every day, and somehow or another,
it hadn't been there. But I saw it somewhere.
What's he after Big Ed about?
Oh, it was something Big Ed had said. I don't think it was directly at Rush, but he just essentially challenged Big, not sort of challenged, but questioned Big Ed's authority on asking a question about something. And Big Ed essentially said, come on, we'll debate anything you want to. Show up here, we'll do it.
Oh, I figured Flush would be on him for maybe having either him himself or his brother owning a non-union construction contracting firm, or Ed having been a Republican for a million years, or a Rush wannabe or something like that. Is anybody still watching Ed's TV show?
Like I say, I don't get.
Does Ed still have a TV show?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they played it, I think, at 6 o'clock here locally on the East Coast, and they replayed it at 3 a.m.
Well, that's worth staying up for.
Yeah, it's one of the things. Well, at least it's Friday night, so, of course, at midnight we start showing Lockup, so we won't have to worry about it tonight. So, I saw tonight, if you turn over in about an hour, over on, I think it's AMC, they're showing a whole bunch, or us tomorrow. The Bond Pa Kettle films. I saw it was going to be.
Oh, and the thing, you ever seen that scene with the mathematics working it out on the blackboard?
Oh, bring down the one. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
God almighty. Oh, what rich, brilliant comedy that is.
I mean, you know, it's something from our childhood we can enjoy. Oh, I think it's tomorrow they are showing like 5 or 6 of the Dick Tracy movies, the old ones from like the 30s.
Oh, man.
So,
well, the Ma and Pa Kettle would be worth keeping an eye out for.
Oh, it is. I mean, you know, it's like saying,
hey, those things were genius for their day.
I mean, most people forget they were probably about the third or fourth down comedy team, you know, probably behind Abbott and Costello.
And there's a backstory on all of those films that a film critic can. I'm sure there's books been written, but that's good to know.
I remember if it was TCM or AC, I think it's TCM, so they should come on before and after, give you a few fun little facts.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Luke, you have yourself a wonderful weekend.
You too, bud, and I say enjoy. Did you all get some rain this evening?
You know, it just kind of dribbled on us, not much of anything. And let's put it this way: it didn't rain enough to cut the humidity. You can lick the air right now.
Yeah. Well, see, they were talking like we're supposed to get this cold snap in the next couple of days here. They were talking like I think it's Sunday morning. It's supposed to be right at 60 for the mornings.
And see, we've been having those nights lately. Mm-hmm. It's been getting downright chilly. Yeah, you know, want a jacket cool.
I'll go for it.
Luke, take care, my
friend. Days, you betcha.
Oh, I know.
Have a good evening.
Take care now. Bye. I think, you know, and I think that that Ma and Pa Kettle, maybe just search Ma and Pa Kettle math on YouTube. It's precious. It's hilarious. It was a bit that I guess once upon a time everybody did, but it is absolutely pulled off to stunning perfection, and I think even a PhD in mathematics would wind up scratching his head. It's genius. Absolute genius. And let's keep it cooking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Not much. Holding down the fort here in Dayton.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
Yep. I tell you what, it's getting weirder and weirder by the week in this country. When I think, oh, there's no way the right wing can get any weirder this week, they topple it, man. They are getting dynamic in strangeness. They're just very dynamic at that. And I was listening to the Glenn Beck clip in that scream. First of all, I've never heard a man do that referee whistle scream.
Yeah, or dog whistle scream, yeah.
No, because you can hear his tonsils or whatever it is in his mouth make that chirping noise that a whistle does at a football game.
Yeah, well, yeah, basically the same as the little ball rattling around in the whistle, you could hear Glenn Beck's uvula flapping against his epiglottis.
Yeah, and I was just stunned at that. I've never heard a man do that before. I never have. And when I was thinking about it through a week, I realized something. That's his primal scream. Because, as disgusting as it sounds, that's what he is when he's at his base, when he feels threatened. And he feels threatened because he knows once something like this gets through, I'm upset like you with what's happening lately, but basically, only thing Obama has to do is says, look, right now, the Senate and the Congress is not very popular in this country. And if you don't get this through, I'm not going to campaign for you. I'm going to leave you hanging high and dry come election time.
But doesn't he? But doesn't he have to counter with some sort of I hesitate to use the word radical, but transformative proposal of his own? And I got to tell you, what I'm seeing coming out of the White House isn't that.
Well, it's like what you say. It's Obama 1 Kenobi. He's so many steps ahead of us sometimes that's unreal. And I know it's upsetting to watch first, but it gets through. It's beautiful. excuse me. And Glenn Beck scream like that because the people he represents, you know, corporate America, want something like some type of universal health care gets through in this country. It's finished for a lot of the people he represents. And he's going to be out of a job because he doesn't have anything else going for him except for the huckster and a scammer. And he can also talk on radio. That's it. The guy's basically a straight from high school to a DJ station type of radio personality.
Yeah, with a stop along the way with the Kansas City Royals, I think, selling hot dogs or some such. But
something like that. He's basically just the voice. And once something like this gets through, he knows it's the end for him. Because, first of all, it's going to be the end anyway because the demographics in this country have changed. Not to hammer on the boomers too much, but the baby boomers who bought all that crap in the 80s and 90s about the invisible hand of the free market are no longer the biggest voting demographic, and also they're becoming disinterested in it. The old Confederate South is dying off as well. In many ways, it's becoming irrelevant. So basically, his back is to the wall. And when that woman wouldn't shut up, wouldn't let him talk over him, kept correcting his mistakes, he freaked out. And when I heard it was chilling to me, that scream. And then as I was listening to it, I just started to laugh because I knew we were onto something. You know, and I understand you're not going to win the argument, but you can make him.
No, you can't win. You can't win a fight with a man who buys ink by a barrel, by the barrel, and you can't win a fight with a man who controls the button that determines whether or not your voice continues to be heard.
Yeah, and usually when you argue politics with people, it's always a zero sum game. But if you make your opponent look like an ass, you'll win in the minds of many people.
You know what? There was something that went down last week at the premiere of the documentary Coal Country that was a perfect example of that. The movie was over and we were all walking out of the cultural center in Charleston, and there was one lone young woman who was speaking for some reason known but to God, kind of the same way with why you'd call Glenn Beck. But she was talking to some of the fiends of coal, you know, the mountain removers. And she was sitting there talking, and she was like talking like this, and never raised her voice. And the instant that she would take a breath, the Fockers would start screaming at her.
Yeah.
Well, guess what happened? The Capitol Security came running over. And they didn't escort her off the premises because she wasn't screaming like some sort of insane banshee. But they got hold of the Fockers and said, well, it's time for you to leave now, boys.
Yeah. And, you know, kudos to that woman's bravery. I mean, you know, I don't have the willpower to do it. I'm sorry. You know, one of them threatened me. I'm sorry, they're getting a size 18 up the side of the head. And, you know, and they're going to come back, and they're going to start the day the next day smiling like a jack-o'-lantern.
Oh, and I just realized I screwed up big time. Because both Glenn Beck and Flush Flemball are, you know, straight out of high school into the radio thing. Because Flemball's family owned a radio station.
Yeah.
And so it was Flemball. It was Flemball who had the cup of coffee with the Royals organization. So there
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, he had a cup of coffee with the Royals. He's got his radio start in Pittsburgh. And, you know, as days go on, I'm really starting to believe what that one man said about him, about having an affair with him in Pittsburgh.
Well, I mean, there's that thing that will not go away, that he was busted. Part of the reason he had to leave Pittsburgh is it has been widely rumored that he was busted by the Pittsburgh police up in what's called the Hill District. I don't know if you've ever been to Pittsburgh. But up in the Hill District, he was busted for what was then called pandering, which in plain English would be the solicitation of homosexual relations.
For cash or just for?
No, he was just, you know, hey, buddy, you want to, hey.
you know, and was he doing it out in public or?
Yeah, that's the whole thing. He was he was cruising.
Oh yeah, okay.
And see, where Flush is concerned, you know, there's this whole pattern in practice. You remember remember that scene in My Fair Lady where Audrey Hepburn as Eliza Doolittle says, and he taught me to walk and talk and act just like a blooming lady. Well, there was a gay man in Rush Limbaugh's life who taught him how to dress. Who taught him what to do with the shrimp fork, besides, you know, poke himself in the eye, who taught him how to speak, who taught him how to appear, who taught him the finer things of life, and just mentored him completely.
Basically like that scene in Pretty Woman with Julia Roberts.
Yes, yes.
Because, you see, that one movie, My Fair Lady's a little too old for me, and
interested.
But yeah, you know, that was just fascinating as hell to hear that man scream. Now, basically what these people are doing is fighting the Battle of Culloden over and over again. Have you ever done a lot of research on that?
I've just read on it, but, you know, I had family in it, so.
I'll try to be not as harsh on your family, but I'm sure they were just confused. But we'll just leave it to that.
No, we're just cranky.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, basically, the Glorious Revolution happened. William of Orange came over, yada, yada, yada. And it was all orchestrated by Parliament because the Stuart crown was really starting to dabble in an absolute monarchy. And under that system, nobody benefits except the monarch. You know, the peasant class suffers like they did in France. Even the nobility suffers because they become emasculated. Anyway.
Yeah, it's a real Mel Brooks moment. It's good to be the king, but that's all it's good to be.
Yeah, anyway, you know, the Stuarts got thrown out, and, you know, they had a son, and all, but he's the legitimate heir of the English throne. Well, no, he's not. He's gone, you know. But Prince Charlie was basically a male version of Paris Hilton in the 17th century.
Oh yes, yes. Oh no, there's not a lot out there to defend about the Bonnie Prince.
Yeah. I want my throne. Well, of course he's not going to show up to fight himself or even to lead the damn troops. So he convinces a bunch of Scottish Highland lords, not many but enough, and not even a majority of Highlanders, to take up arms, what little arms they had, and re-sack London and give him back the crown. And a part of it was they convinced, you know, people even in the lowest peasantry class for Highlanders. You know, people that were ill-fed, ill-clothed, ill-armed. You know, people would go in there with...
Yeah, that's my people you're talking about. Yep.
Yeah. Would go in there with a rusty sword and a flintlock pistol that was rusted shut. They couldn't use it. And they, you know, children. And the amusing thing was they were the army they were facing off had more Scotsmen in it than what was in the Bonnie Prince's army. And they basically got slaughtered at this Battle of Culloden so they could put a male Paris Hilton on the English throne. You know, basically, you know, stubbornness and crankiness to the extent that it harms you and your family to such an extent to where you're now homeless. Or, you know, if you fought in a battle, you got killed. You know, even if you deserted and escaped somewhere, they still hunted you down like a dog and murdered you and executed you.
Well, and eventually, wasn't part and parcel of why Culloden came out the way it did was because the people who had been following him decided, you know, enough of this little pissant?
Basically, yeah.
And because the Kincaids, from whom I spring, there were four or five Kincaid sons of a man named Alexander Kincaid.
Yeah.
And he was a publisher of note in Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I forget if it was Hobbes or Locke, but one of those guys. He'd been the first publisher.
In fact, I've mentioned that to people that work at my university, and they've been really fascinated to find that because they want to find an exact link of where people who were relatives that supported that rebellion were sent to the United States.
Well, we weren't sent. We weren't
or escaped or whatever.
Yeah, because what happened was the Bonnie Prince turned tail and ran.
Yeah.
And headed back for France. But I guess my guys, three of those brothers, I think James and George and Andrew were their names, if I recall correctly. They stayed behind in the rear guard action and were captured. And they were set to be dealt some rough justice. And the story is that they were spirited out of the English camp, put aboard a ship by family retainers, and sent to America because during the first Jacobite rebellion, their uncle David had to beat a hasty retreat. And he had come to Augusta County, Virginia, wherein he built the first jail there.
Yeah. So basically, one day you might actually get a call from somebody from Wright State.
Hey, that'd be cool. That'd be cool.
Yeah. But anyway, back to my point, and people that fought in that, you know, very asinine endeavor, you know, admittedly asinine endeavor, were sent to America. And here's what they either did. They either learned from their lesson and said, I'm never doing that again. Or they repeated it. And they repeated it largely once again in the Civil War. You know, because the Bonnie Blue Flag and all that stuff. You know, you find a lot of mindsets and language that come out of that battle. And corporate America, once again, you know, took up the mantle and, you know, of wanting to be the absolutist monarch in this country. And it's something that, you know, will hurt us all. And they're basically getting guys like Glenn Beck to refight Culloden for him again.
Cannon fodder.
With those same mindsets, with those same, but I'm the rightful one. You know, I can even hear it in the birther movement. Oh, he's not a real American, that Obama. He's from Kenya or Mozambique or something.
Yeah, and they call him Sotoro.
Yeah, and you know, you can hear these, you know, you can hear the vocabulary, the mindsets, the attitudes out of these people, and they're basically refighting the Battle of Culloden. And it is, and
Scots-Irish Scots-Irish are hereditarily predisposed to fight lost causes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And not all of them, because some of them smart, but well, that's kind of stupid. I'm going to move on now. And, like you have. You know, you're like, well, I'm going to fight the fights that we're fighting, and, you know, the ones that are rational, reasonable, and logical, and, you know, what are these crazy bastards are doing? I'll just leave them be. But you still hear those mindsets and those irrational fears, and you can still see it. These guys are still fighting that damn battle. They're still cannon fodder. It's not even for their benefit. Because, you know...
I use the phrase, and you've picked it up, cannon fodder. There doesn't necessarily have to be gunpowder involved. Because there's cannon fodder in the culture wars as well.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's the cannon fodder of the Scots-Irish. And, you know, Joe Bagent has commented so brilliantly on this in his book, Deer Hunting with Jesus. The fact of the matter is, it's the southern and southeastern Scots-Irish and the Scots-Irish who basically migrated across the United States, across the continent, who fill those right-wing evangelical churches and come boiling out en masse as long as the Republican Party will tell them that they're going to save the unborn babies.
Yeah. And
never do anything for them.
Yeah. And you know, Dayton always says Appalachian adjacent. So we have a lot of them here, and I can see it here, except most of them are smarting up by now, you know, in the city of Dayton.
Do you really think so?
Well, most of them, in Dayton, but in the burbs and stuff like that, in towns surrounding Dayton, not really, because I came from a town that was sort of a satellite of Dayton called Carlisle, and I always joke that they're 40 or 50 years behind, but in some respects, it's very much true, and I can still see that. And yeah, the Scots-Irish are always fighting and losing battles. You know, they're going to the tea parties, they're, attending these damn mega churches, they're, and it's never to their benefit. Because let's say hypothetically that the guys who fought for the Bonnie Prince won Kowatin. How would it benefit them? Would they become nobility? No.
No, that's the whole thing. The poor whites who fought the Civil War were not going to get a plantation.
Yeah.
When they won.
Yeah, and it was a stupid endeavor for a really bad idea for a really untrue, illogical cause.
Right, and that's my whole point about culture war cannon fodder. You know, these people who come scurrying out of the evangelical churches like, you know, cockroaches when the lights come on, they don't get anything out of it either.
Yeah.
They didn't get anything out of Ronald Reagan's administration. They didn't get anything out of George H.W. Bush's administration. They didn't get anything out of George W. Bush's administration. But as long as you wave that bloody sheet, they'll be back for you.
Yeah.
Now, the sad thing is that the Democrats kind of caught on to it. The Democratic Party kind of caught on to it.
Yeah.
And they figured out that they could do the same thing with labor groups and environmental groups and gender equity groups, that you can... you know, promise them the world and give them nothing.
Yeah, but I will say this for our group is we kind of tend our promises to want to be kept, and if they aren't, you know, we'll throw your ass under the bus. And you can tell that when Harry Reid's like, I wish all our little activist groups would leave Democrats alone. Hell no, you know. We got a contract, and we're keeping it up. That's what happens in our world. You made a verbal contract, which we worked our asses off to get to fill up our end of the deal. Now it's time to fill up yours. Them so much, not really. And also, you're seeing this battle of quad mindset with mountaintop removal. You know, what does it benefit these guys in the long run? not anything.
No, it's counterproductive.
Yeah.
It is directly contrary to their best interest.
Yeah. You're blowing up your goddamn home to your fucking home. You're blowing up your home to basically sell whatever minerals are in it, so you'll be displaced. Because they're non-union jobs, you have no pension, so you can't exactly retire to Florida and drink
when the times were good, they had a hell of a 401k.
Yeah.
But guess what? They ain't worth nothing anymore.
Yeah.
And the other part of that is that you're not just blowing up your home, you're making sure that, I mean, if you're, see, I have talked to some of these folks, and they say things like, I've had communications from wives who say, look, if there was anything my husband could do, he'd gladly do it because he hates Massey. He hates how he's treated. But there's nothing else here. And yet you keep doing it instead of thinking, I'm going to find something else to do so that my son, my daughter, my kids, my grandkids won't feel the least inclination to go and do this. Of course, there won't be any of it there to do. And additionally, when we talk particularly about this issue, the whole idea that, put it this way. The reason they're able to keep them non-union is because they are well paid, all right?
Yeah.
I mean, they'll pay them $55,000, $60,000 a year. These are $60,000 a year heavy equipment operators, all right?
Yeah, that's pretty damn good.
Now, for a guy who dropped out of high school at 16, you're darn right it is.
Yeah, for a guy who probably can't even read at a ninth grade level, that's a hell of a good job.
You're darn right. And so here's the fun part. I think you've really hit something with this analogy. Because just as the people at Culloden and just as the poor whites fighting for the South in the Civil War weren't going to, even if they won, they weren't going to get anything out of it, so too with a mountain remover. Because one guy making $60,000 a year, do you know how much coal that one guy can be responsible for in terms of sales and profit to the company?
I have no idea.
$50 million per year.
So he's not even getting 1% if my math is right.
Yeah, he is not. He is getting 0.1% if my math is right.
Oh my God. Yeah, but also, it's still not benefiting because his children are breathing poison, and they're probably if they don't have brain damage, they have asthma or something else or everything that you could catch from all the toxins that are in God's green earth that surround coal. And, and as somebody that took geology, although fairly long time ago.
Me too.
I'm pretty educated in the fact that all the stuff that surrounds coal is pretty damned nasty. And you don't really want to be around it. And, also they're breathing it in, so their life's probably shortened by at least a decade. So, it's literally just crazy to watch. But once again, fighting the damn Battle of Culloden so Bonnie Prince Charlie can sell coal to fucking China.
Have you ever thought about turning this into a blog post? We will happily put it on the Horn webpage.
Yeah, I can, but I don't want to give my web address over the phone.
No. Just write it, email it to me, and it'll turn into a blog post on the Horn.
Okay, it's at Bob at
BobKincaid@gmail.com.
Okay, BobKincaid@gmail.com. All right, that sounds good. Also, if you want to give me like your information, so I can give it to it was a senior level English history class where I learned about this. About the Battle of Culloden. In fact, that was their biggest sticking point with us, was learning about this battle. And she says, if there's one thing you come out of this class with, it's a good understanding of the Battle of Culloden. And at the time I thought, this is something she just sticks on because she finds it amusing. No, it's something she sticks on because we repeat it in American history, in American politics, in American life every day. Or a good fraction of us does in this country. Good enough to swing elections and put, you know, real crooks in power. But, yeah, I'll do that. Bob@gmail.com. All right, I'll do that.
All right, cool. Well, great talking to you. Don't be a stranger.
All right.
All right. Later.
Bye.
Bye now. What a, you know, I may have to take the audio of that call and do whatever kind of computer magic has to be done to it and ship that off to our buddy Joe Bajant. Because I bet Joe will go, young man gets it. He gets it. Indeed, indeed. Well, I tell you what, we'll take a top of the hour break, I guess. Come back. I want to come back and just share a little of this and a little of that with you, a couple of emails. Just something to finish out the hour on. First of all, got an email from our buddy William. And he says, Bob, we might not agree, but here, what we have here, what we've got with a freak like Rahm Emanuel, who's nothing more and never has been more than a career politician, who wants to control from the big seat. He's just the tip of this political arena, whether Democrat or Republican, all they give a damn about is their career. Those who work for the people are few and far between to the point Rush could glide through without making way. The Capitol should have the doors opened and fire hosed empty, and the Senate's not much better. These people have done nothing but soak up the offerings of special interest groups and lobbies. Next time any one of them stands up to speak, a large screen with light up scrolling letters should be set behind each and every one of them with the list of who gave them money and how much and why and how much their health care has cost the taxpayers, as well as who is their buddy and their voting record, William. Yeah, that's why I personally believe in ditching. How would you do it, though? But, Lord, it's one of those things that just speaks to you in terms of delicious irony to suggest to them that what we need to do is cancel their health care till we get ours. That would seem mean and vindictive, wouldn't it? But at this point, aren't the American people, don't we have the right to be a little mean and vindictive? Haven't we earned that? Somehow, I think we have. And then, backing up just a little bit, because we have, we're forever having movie references, and we've got another one here. And those of you who have seen the film, and I trust, knowing this audience as I do, knowing you, the Horn family, I trust that you'll get this. Our buddy David says, to really connect with the truest image of Pat Buchanan, think back to that Irish firehouse captain. Oh, who played him? Who played him? I haven't had time to go to IMDb. That Irish firehouse captain that had all that hatred for the young black man that owned the fine motor car in Ragtime. You've seen Ragtime. Awesome film. David says, I know, oh film buff you, that you remember that ruddy-faced, profane, big-eared bigot. Oh, yeah. And now I got to go watch Ragtime again, because I haven't seen that in forever. Which then segues nicely into this. Racism on Parade was the opening theme of the program. And I give you Atwater, California, City Councilman Gary Frago, Wamp, Womp. I don't know what to do with this letter A. Frago. Gary Frago is a big, pasty-faced, jowly white guy who is a city councilman in Atwater, California. And this is a story from the Merced Sun-Star. And it turns out that from October 2008 to February 2009, Gary Frago, equal opportunity here, sent no less than 7 emails from the paper sent it, obtained these emails from an anonymous source. Gary Frago has admitted having sent the emails. His response in being presented with these things, and I'm going to tell you what was in them in a minute. His response in being confronted with these emails was to say, if they're from me, then I sent them. God, you cannot touch. That kind of logic is unassailable. If they're from me, then I sent them. I have no disrespect for the president or anybody. They weren't meant in any bad way or harm. Who did he send these emails to? Did he send it to Aunt Matilda? Maybe, but more importantly, he sent them to the Atwater, a county supervisor, a former police chief, a city manager, a former city council member, a former president of a veterans group, a former Grand Knight of the Knights of Columbus, as well as a whole bunch of others. What he was doing is forwarding stuff. They were forwarded to him, among others, by a retired Atwater City Works employee, a resident of Merced, and a retired Air Force colonel in Alabama. Yeah. So what was in them? Get the hazmat suits on. And please understand that this is a journalism moment, and I do not like these words. On January 15th, Gary Frago sent an email that read, breaking news, Playboy just offered Sarah Palin $1 million to pose nude in the January issue. Michelle Obama got the same offer from National Geographic. He also sent another email that compared Obama to O.J. Simpson. A third one that he sent suggested that we needed to change the language now and no longer use the phrase nigger rig, and that that phrase would be replaced by presidential solutions. So let's see if we've got this all squared up. From all the way down at the Atwater, California City Council, all the way up to former senators like Zell Miller talking Gorilla Glue, and Pat Buchanan, and Todd Tyert from Kansas, we have vast manifestations of the most revolting racism imaginable. Personal, cultural, institutional. Yeah. We'll see if we can find something else to work with in the coming hour. Your phone calls are also important, this being, they're important any night, but this being Friday on the front porch, it's especially important. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm sorry for even using that word. I'm so sorry. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
Standing in the rain with his head hung low. Couldn't get a ticket. It was a sold-out show.
Well, it did it to me again. I know I could have just let it roll on, but I hate having my bumpers all screwed up when I work to find it. Okay, let's see if this is any better.
Stop!
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Thirteen past the hour, I'd say that there is a rock-solid 40 minutes of good conversation left in the program tonight. Yeah, okay. Thanks for the update, David. Kenny McMillan played the fireman Willie Conklin in Ragtime. See, I can see the face, but I wouldn't have, absent IMDb or something like that, I would never have come up with Kenneth McMillan. Did I just say Kenneth McMillan? Yeah, Kenny McMillan, Willie Conklin. There we go. I'm terrible like that. You know, you can see the face, and it feels like it's on the inside of your face looking at you, but you put a name to it. Yeah. Bye. Let's go to the phones, Friday on the front porch, and see what's cooking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Scott from Salem. How you doing?
Scott, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Okay. Okay.
Let me tell you, you're in rare form tonight. I just had to call.
I am? I had no idea.
White, and playing White Wedding at the end of that sequence was just perfect.
Really, well, it was supposed to see. You heard the abortive. Oh dear, that'll get the right wing mad. You heard the abortive Foreigner track there. That was supposed to be Dirty White Boy, but Bill Gates can't. Bill Gates apparently can't keep music in order. So,
not surprising.
The White Wedding seemed like a good sort of fallback position.
No, that was perfect. That was perfect. So just, you know, I got a call because, you know, I want you to know that folks like me, you know, we're listening all the time. And I keep thinking to myself, you know, I got to call in. And you know what we do, right? We turn on the horn and we make dinner. We've talked about this.
You have no idea how often I think about that.
But it's perfect. I just want you to, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there, same spot, right, where we do this all the time. Let's put on the horn and see what Bob's going on about. You know, what's up tonight, right? And it's just so enjoyable to listen to. The a lot of us just, it's a kind of free riding, I guess, you know? You say, well, this is great. What the, you know, let me make dinner and listen, and, you know, it's excellent. But I just wanted to call in and pitch into the community because it's really, really good stuff that you're doing. And I thought the last sequence was really, I mean, really excellent. You know, you don't hear stuff like that in the regular media where things get exposed for what they are. It's just...
Well, and you know, with the Gary Frago, you know, I hate names like that. I just hate it.
When you do that, though, it's just too funny.
You know, someday we'll live in a world with that doesn't have indeterminate vowels in them. Or we'll all write in Esperanto or something.
Exactly, that's what it'll take. Yeah.
But when I read the Gary, whoever, story, I was immediately reminded of our new friend Jude up in the Northwest, who is maintaining a persistent a campaign against Senator Senator Dianne Black. From North Central Tennessee, the one whose assistant sent out all the hateful racist emails, and she wouldn't fire her but gave her a stern talking to?
I don't remember that.
Well,
that sounds typical, though.
Yeah, that's her. Well, Jude has been wearing her out and had an email, and I love how I think about things and then people update me. It sometimes makes me think I have special powers. But I heard from Jude this evening. And she said, P.S., still no word from Senator Dianne Black's office, even though I call it every day. I had read on her website that she was also a nurse and has promoted hospice palliative care, so now I add this information to my calls as I'm a retired hospice nurse. Let's just see what comes from this, Bob. And this story is something that broke, the Dianne Black story broke 3 or 4 weeks ago, and Jude calls her every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
When do I get an answer?
Yeah. Well, that's what you want media to actually be, right? I mean, you don't want media to be this sort of passive thing, right? You want to break these stories so people can do something about it. And that's what I think is great about it. I mean, it's the difference between this show and so many other shows where they're completely passive. And this one is people actually learn about things they didn't know about. And, you know, many times you give them something to do about it, which is just really, you know, it's a sort of totally different model. Rather than having, you know, passive consumption of media, you actually view the media as a way you learn something, and then you change your behavior, and you can go out and actually do something with the information.
Well, and you know, that's a function kind of the ongoing evolution of what the horn is, Scott, because... you know, we talk about liberal radio, progressive radio, liberal voice, blah, 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 blah. And then a while back I started referring to it as activist radio.
Exactly, yep.
Because I can't sit here and deliver marching orders like, you know, I do marching orders. But I can't sit here and ask people to do things that I'm not willing to do myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's... you know, they say, like in television and theater and film, that every now and then, or back in the history thereof, that someone would break the fourth wall and acknowledge the audience.
Right.
The George Burns did that in the George Burns television program way, way back, because he would talk directly to the audience. And I guess we're trying to accomplish some of that here. Because if we're just sitting around flapping our gums at each other, what's the point? You know, the whole idea is that we recognize that we've been minimized, we've been marginalized. The for-profit media and the right wing in general has tried to make it appear that we don't even exist. And so the only way, if we're just sitting and talking and not doing, then we're acceding to that definition that they've given us. It's only by raising our voices. It's only with Susan out there dialing the phone, punching the buttons on the phone till the ends of her fingers are blue. It's Jude wearing out.
Citizen.
Yeah, it's the responsibility of an informed citizenry.
I mean, that's the idea behind democracy, right? People are actually informed, and that democracy is an activist proposition, right? The people go out and they use their votes in a proactive way. They're informed and they use their votes to express their political and sort of cultural and social ideals. And when we get turned into a totally passive sort of consumer society, and that means consumers of political information as well as products and so forth, we kind of lose, we kind of throw our hands up about democracy in its entirety. We say, oh, well, you know, being informed, that's a lot of work. What the heck, you know?
And you know, I don't, and when I talk about the frustrating, or we talk about the frustrating aspects of all of this, when we sit and we make the phone calls and we write the letters and we pound the pavement, we knock on the doors, and we get the same garbage that we're getting now, it's disheartening. It is absolutely disheartening, but I would not for a minute have anybody take my occasionally pessimistic rants as a reason to stop. If anything, it's a reason to redouble efforts.
Well, it's also the fact that a show like this, you know, real media, is revealing, right? So, you know, you listen to the rhetoric of the right, and they basically say, okay, well, we've got a black president, right? And we're about to have a Hispanic female or Latina on the Supreme Court. So we're done, right? And they say, what are these people's problem? What's their problem? I mean, they've reached the highest heights. And it's a very convenient argument for many people who don't want to look back.
But that's such a cheap cop-out, Scott.
It's a total cop-out.
Because, you know, it's like the conquest of Everest. You know, Sir Edmund Hillary gets to the top of Everest, and he says, wait, Tenzing Norgay, don't take one more step. I'm the man on top of the mountain. And so, yeah, we've got a dark-skinned president. Well, that doesn't mean that the questions are all answered for everyone else who looks and was born and exists in this society like him. When one Latina woman makes it to the Supreme Court, does not mean that the problems are over for all Latina women or women in general.
Right.
If you know, the fact that South Carolina has a closeted gay senator doesn't mean that it's okay to be gay in South Carolina.
Right. Now, I mean, it's all very convenient, right? It's like, okay, we can stop talking about that now. Well, no. Right, because it's not reality. We contribute, you know, what we can to this group called the Southern Poverty Law Center, which I'm sure you know about. Morris Dees' organization.
Yes.
And we get their publication. It's unbelievable, right? And you see people who want to just say, you know, well, that doesn't really happen anymore, right? No, that's all been taken care of, right? It's all good now. It's a convenient thing. It's a nice, passive, convenient thing. Oh, yeah, no, that's good. We're all done. We don't have those problems anymore. Now we can go back to what we, you know, to our sort of conservative ideology, which is, well, what's mine is mine, and what's as much of what yours that I can get is mine also, right? With no inequality. It's just fair, open competition. So if you can blind yourself to the fact that the competition isn't fair, then you can actually have those beliefs. You can, you know what I'm saying? I mean, conservative beliefs. You can say, look, we're all just working hard, and we're all just trying to get our thing, and you know, people who work harder get more. And you say, well, that's an okay concept if the playing field is level, which it's not. And they say, no, playing field's level. I've been told the playing field's level. It's level. No, it's not, right? So their basic premise goes away. The basic premise is that we're all just working hard to try to, you know, to try to do our thing. If you actually show them the fact that the playing field is unlevel, and so that's why they're so happy to have these arguments, like, oh no, this is good. We have an African American president. This is terrific. Okay, done. Check box. No, can't use that argument against us anymore. It's fair now. Right, the fact that we have 10 times more than you is just because we're 10 times harder working or something. We have 10 times better idea than you did. So I think that's the problem, is that it's all nice if you leave the rocks where they are, but if you turn the rocks over and show them to people, that these people who want the world to be a very simple place, you say, well, it's actually a little more complicated and a little more messy and a little more unfair than maybe you, than maybe makes you feel good. You know, then you get into the mess that we get into as progressives, right? The world's a complicated place. And, you know, some people have a harder time than others just because of who they are. You know, those are the, you know, and then you have to, you know, try to figure out what to do about that. But yeah, I just think it's very, the difference between the kind of media you do and that you and the Horn community do is it's an enlightening kind of media, right? It sheds light on things and it says, no, wait a minute. Bad stuff is still happening, like really wrong things are still happening. And we should get engaged in doing something about that. We should internalize it and not beat ourselves up over it. We should just go and do something about it. So it's, you know,
And part of that, Scott, you know, you touched on something in the course of what you just said that I think is so very, very important because it's part of the I don't know if it's a human urge or an American urge, but for instance. When a guy goes in, walks into the vestibule of a church and blows away a doctor,
right?
The other side, and I guess conservatism's response to that, is to say, well, he did that, and he did that on his own, and he did it in a vacuum.
Right.
That there are no institutional processes or factors that molded him into, and yet... And we say the same thing about that Brune guy. Was it Brune? No. Von Brune, who shot the guard in the Holocaust Museum.
Right.
Well, you know, he was obviously crazy, and he was a racist. And see, the right wing isn't like that.
Or the guy who shot the cops in Pittsburgh because he thought they were going to take
these are all isolated incidents.
Right. And remember back in the day when people still had album collections, right?
Yes, sir.
You'd go into someone's house for dinner, right, and you'd rummage through their album collection. It was like this is a slight digression, but I know you'll appreciate it. You actually learn a lot about people, about what they're listening to, by looking at what they're listening to. Same thing with their books, right? Okay, let's take a look at these people's coffee tables and ask the question, what books are on their coffee table?
Yeah, like you walk into Pat Buchanan's house, and on the coffee table is White Like Me.
All of these people, this is the thing, right? I mean, all of these people have that, they're listening to that media, they're reading those books, right? It's not, like you say, it's not a vacuum, right? There's a whole environment created for sponsoring or for fostering that way of thinking, for making it actually almost logical to do what these people do, to them at least.
Yeah, it is their response to a world that is incomprehensible to them because they cannot conceive of they cannot conceive that the world they live in is complex and complicated and nuanced.
And that people, then, you know, thinking about this today, you know, that you know, not to use the biological metaphor too far, but you know, you have ant colonies, right? And what makes ant colonies and bees and all these other colony animals really successful is not the fact that each one of them is individually trying to maximize the amount of honey they get for themselves, right? There's the concepts of altruism and cooperation in those communities that require you to consider a concept beside self-interest.
Yes.
So the success of the community.
Well, look at the pollen dance. If a honeybee hive operated on conservative, capitalist-driven principles, there would be no pollen dance because the honeybee would come back to the hive and slink off and deposit the honey and the pollen and stuff and then buzz back out of the hive and go back to where she had found that field of wonderful flowers and try to gather it all herself. Instead, she comes back and she does the pollen dance and everybody goes and benefits from it.
And it's really hilarious, right? Because the same thing with the ants, right? We nature shows, we love these things. So there's this E.O. Wilson thing where they show the ants, when the ant colony moves, that they actually form these bridges of ants clutching onto each other for the other ants to go across and to bring the stuff, you know, the nectar or whatever from the one ant colony to the next. Some of those ants die in that process. You know, the ones who are actually making the bridge as opposed to walking across the bridge?
Yes.
Some of them die in that process, right? And so the question is, what's the evolutionary advantage of giving the ant the concept that it might actually want to be one of the ants that forms the bridge? And the thing is that it's better for the colony overall. The colony survives because some percentage of the ants consider that, right? Don't consider it. That's a bit much. But they behave in that way. They behave in a way that is colony supporting, or to anthropomorphize it, other regarding, right? You actually care what happens to other people because it's good for the community if other people are okay, right? Healthcare, right? Why do we want people to have healthcare? Why do we want other people to have healthcare? Because it's good for the community if everyone has healthcare. Right? Not because it's better for me. I'm not hoarding healthcare here, right? Trying to get as much as I can for myself, and I don't care what happens to anybody else. And that's the difference that you see in the sort of conservative approach to it and the more progressive approach, is that they realize that in order for us to get on to doing the business of a culture and a society, there's certain things we need to do for and with each other. Even though we could hoard it for ourselves, it's actually better for us if we share it. It's like it's so hilarious. It's such a simple concept. And yet humans, we have, the Congress has split almost 50-50, okay, 60-40 this year, down this concept of half the people believe the best thing to do is to act entirely in self-interest, and the other half of the people believe that it makes sense to support people broadly because then everyone can be more successful. You create an environment where people can be more successful. And we're supposed to be top of the food chain, right? And we're just catching on to this stuff. We're having political battles about stuff the bees figured out however many, well, it was 5,900 years ago, according to the biblical scholars, right?
Right, right.
So, but you know what I'm saying? I think it's really funny, and that's what I think is really interesting about a show like this. Because the things that are participatory, that are community-related, that bring a community of people together to share with each other. And this is, again, I'm just going to have to say, when I sit and listen, as enjoyable as that is, I realize that part of what I'm doing is free riding, right? You know, I'm letting other people do the work. And I think that what you have in your community is a group of people that think, yeah, this is something we make together. Right, we're going to make this thing together, and I think it's really, I'm hoping that we're gaining ground as a philosophy, right? The simple philosophy that if we create an environment where people take care of each other, we can do far more and better things than if it's everyone for themselves. It doesn't sound like a radical concept, but it apparently must be.
And how sad that that's radical.
Yeah.
But with most of the issues that we're concerned about, and I don't know if it is radical. I know that the other side desperately tries to paint it as radical. I mean, my God, another example, Scott. This, you know, and it's been laying around for a couple of days till you showed up and opened the door. Michelle Bachmann, you know, the woman who loves CO2 because it's natural. She appeared on the Dennis Miller radio show. I don't know what station that is on. I can't imagine it's on many.
Fine piece of journalism there, yeah.
Yeah. The guy who flushed away the hottest career in television comedy to turn into a wingnut. I wonder if he ever tunes into Bill Maher on HBO and goes, I could still be doing that if I didn't suck. He had Michelle Bachmann on her show. And, of course, she was doing some textual analysis and criticism of health care legislation.
Oh, this will be good, yeah.
Yeah, Dull, this is a Bill Hicks strap-in moment. Describing it, she said, it's a monstrosity. I have the bill printed out on my desk. Really? I didn't know you could get a desk through a printer, but, who the hell am I? I have the bill printed out on my desk. It's over 1,000 pages long. On the 16th page, because that's as far as she got, it says, whatever health care you have now, it's going to be gone within 5 years. So your current health care plan, you're not going to have in 5 years. What you're going to have is a government plan, and a federal bureau is going to decide what you get or if you get anything at all. You know what? I'm okay with that last sentence, because I trust a federal bureau that has, the power of the courts over it and things like that, as opposed to, remember when we tried to have a health care bill of rights, a patient's bill of rights? Yeah, I do too. But the idea, you know, because, yeah, I trust a bureaucrat at Cigna. God forbid I've ever got a 17-year-old child who needs a liver transplant and we've got Cigna coverage because, you know, they just send you the letter that says go die.
A perfect example, yeah.
But she's just lying. And gets away with it. On page 16 it says that your health care is going to be gone in 5 years. The only problem is that page 16 is the beginning of a section called Protecting the Choice to Keep Current Coverage. The 5 years comments on page 17, but what it boils down to is that it creates a 5-year grace period for current group health plans to meet specified standards. It doesn't say it's going away. It simply says that the avarice-driven health plans are going to have to comply with certain standards that relate to administrative cost and the coverage that they extend.
Right, right.
But from that, she extrapolates, you're not going to have any health care in 5 years.
Well, this is the annihilation rhetoric that the right likes to use, right? You know, the world is coming to an end. You know, they want to put an end to our way of life as we know it. They hate us for our way of life. You know, there's no shades of gray in anything. It's all like, you know, well, this would be the end of whatever, right? And this is what they're saying. Oh, you know, within 5 years, your health care is going away. You've got to turn it into this like, black and white thing, even though it's not at all what it says. And anybody who knows the political process knows no way they would ever get that passed. Right? And yet that works, right? Because you can say it in 15 seconds.
Right, but at some point, Scott, doesn't... I mean, if journalism is what journalism is said to be, and I realize that's an if the size of Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, yeah.
But if journalism is what journalism is said to be, is it not incumbent upon somebody doing journalism at some point in time to simply point out things? Well, I mean, they're credibility issues. The right wing and conservatives are the Chicken Little party. Okay, the sky is falling. The sky is, you know, oh, we're going to raise the minimum wage by a nickel. Everybody will go out of business.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Nobody goes out of business.
Yeah. We're going to raise the taxes. We're going to raise the marginal tax rates on the most wealthy to what they used to be in the 90s. And that's going to take these people and make them stop working. Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Well, the biggest profitability that business ever had in this country was from the close of World War II until, I think our buddy Reverbo, the number I saw in what he sent me was 1980.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so roughly 1946 to 1980. During that time, we had the highest marginal tax rates in a progressive income tax system on the wealthiest of Americans that we've ever had. And oddly enough, it correlates with the time of greatest national prosperity.
Right.
Now, I mean, again, isn't it incumbent on somebody who does journalism, somebody with some credibility, to just point to the other side when they start this business about, oh, it'll kill business, oh, small business, to just look at them and say, here are the facts, and the facts indicate that those people are lying to you.
Yeah, we've, you know, you and I think have talked about this before, this sort of fake journalism where you think that if what you do is you sit down at the table, two people on opposite sides of an issue, and give them each equal time, you've done your job as a journalist. Right? Even if one side is presenting factually incorrect information, or if one side represents the view of, oh, say, 1% of the scientists, and the other side represents the view of the other 99% of the sort of earth scientists and geologists and so forth. So I think, I mean, it's the kind of journalism we're seeing less and less often because I see it on media outlets that I respect, right? I mean, I think for example, the whatever they're calling it now, it used to be called the McNeil-Lehrer Report, but now it's the McNeil News Hour or Lehrer News Hour or whatever.
Right, right.
It's excellent, right? I mean, there's nobody yells at anybody. It's just good, right? But they do the same thing. They're the person in the center of the desk, and they've got two people on opposing sides, and they give them roughly equal time. And what there isn't that sort of like, well, wait a minute now. Wasn't the report you're quoting actually discredited by this later report? And you know, wasn't there like this quote that people say all the time, that it costs more fuel to produce corn ethanol than corn ethanol gives you back in energy? Turns out that that's actually not true. Now, I'm not saying corn ethanol is a good thing, because it's still very inefficient. It's still very inefficient, right? But just people get on the news and they say, well, you know, it takes more than a gallon of gasoline to produce a gallon of corn. That's actually not true, and that's been disproven. There's a classic paper where they actually said that, and it's because they didn't include a number of the inputs, and they got it wrong. So you get somebody up there, and they say, well, it's well known that a gallon of corn ethanol takes more than a gallon of gas to produce.
Right.
And then, you know, that goes by as though it's a sort of a correct and reasonable sort of declarative statement.
But once that gets out there, that is actually not true, then you have the attendant problem that you get to, because we're not talking about the application of letter grade B level logic here, then you get to throw everything else out in the way of complaints about corn-based ethanol, like the fact that it drives the food prices through the daggum roof,
right,
and that it's
right.
bad for poor people.
The way that corn is made is completely environmentally unsustainable.
Right, or that it's genetically modified, or any, and then
problems.
Yeah, but you get to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And see, all this, however, is not to say that it has not happened, that we have not had those journalists. I've just received some news, Scott, that's very sad and troubling to me. I don't know if you know this or not, but it's just been announced that Walter Cronkite is dead.
Oh, jeez.
And I saw that even as we were having this conversation, and it was one of those, you know, thank you, universe kind of moments, because compare Britt Hume to Walter Cronkite. No comparison.
Yeah.
Compare Katie Couric to Walter Cronkite. You know, I can see Walter at age 93 or 94 saying, well, they're not going to get rid of her. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
But we have, you know, when Walter Cronkite looked America in the eye and said, Vietnam is lost.
Right.
Then America changed.
Mm-hmm.
Because Vietnam was lost and had been lost and was never going to be won. Now, it took... It took the government, what, six, seven, eight more years to acknowledge the reality that Walter Cronkite shared in, what, 1967? But it does not change the fact that he was a truth teller and that he did use his position to influence, for good, the national debate. And he didn't, you know, and there was no, and a lot of this coincides, you know, we call it the for-profit media and so forth, Scott, because it is. Because all of this stuff, I think if you want to find a defining moment when especially television news went to hell, you go to ABC when they put Rune Arledge, who was in charge of sports programming,
right,
in charge of the news division.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, news became not a function of public trust, but a function of corporate profitability.
It becomes a profit center, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the next thing you know, it's gone. And so, you know, we can have it, but I don't know how we have it without, at some point in time, a fundamental sea change. And, you know, you may see it first in the so-called dead tree media, because there is a paradigm floating around that's being explored by a number of people whereby newspapers give up the idea of being for profit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That they go to, because, you know, as you know as well as I do, being non-profit does not mean being non-profitable.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can change newspapers over to a model whereby they are not doing things that are driven by their need to generate advertising, then you take a tremendous burden off of reporters and editors and copywriters and the entire structure, everything but the marketing department, who has to go and get honest work.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, it's going to be interesting to see whether people, because that's one model, right? One model is you treat it as a nonprofit, and it goes from there. I think that the problem I have with that, that the concern I would have with that is, and what I would, the alternative I would like to see, is I would like to see people actually start placing value on legitimate media, right? And so I'll say that about your show. I'll say that about, you know, the things that we subscribe to, right? You subscribe to the, so, and you know, this take a little digression into the project that we're working on now. We have the same issue.
I wanted to make sure that I did ask you about Make the Path.
So I sent you the thing, and I have to first do an on-air apology to Reverbo for not getting him in the loop earlier. So I'm a total loser for that, and he can you know, I hope he forgives me for it. But I'll get that out to him too, because you know these are the kinds of people that I think what you need to do is you need to have people say, it matters to me. Let me back up. Say, when you get something for free, it means somebody else is paying for it, right? So when you're not actually paying for your newspaper, when you don't pay enough for a newspaper, or you don't pay enough for a media outlet, because everything's free now apparently, right? On the internet, the great revolution of the internet is everything's free. Well, actually, I think that's not the great revolution of the internet, because by making everything free, what you're actually doing is saying somebody else is paying for it, and you know who that somebody else is. Right, the content on these sites is driven by the people paying for it. It's not a hard concept to grasp. Actually, it's
no, and in fact, it's
time with it.
It's fascinating because if you've seen the technology stories out in the last week or so, apparently Microsoft is now getting on the freeware bandwagon because Google has been so thoroughly kicking their butts. That Microsoft, and there, you know, that's one of those jury still out kind of things. Microsoft is going to offer an online version of Microsoft Office free.
Yeah. Well, of course, it's not going to actually be free.
But
I mean,
what is
free? Revenue from you somehow.
Sure. And the, you know, anybody who uses Gmail, as I do.
Good example, yeah.
Knows that. I'd really like to have a conversation sometime with the algorithm writers, because let's see.
Yeah.
I just opened an email invitation here from our dear friend Dr. Bill O'Brien, and he's inviting me to lunch. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the ads down the right hand side, sponsored links from Google, because Google's algorithms have read my email, and actually they read Bill's.
Right.
And Google wants me to know that I can have laptop lunch boxes. Don't just do lunch, redo lunch, free shipping and no tax. They want to offer me a $45 mini bento box. They want to sell me lunch bags for kids. They've got a stainless steel lunch box for me and a Japanese bento box. Now I got to tell you, this is Bill O'Brien, not Bill Tahashi. Okay?
If you think about that, right, let's just step back from this and imagine we just saw the internet for the first time today, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty humorous, right? This is the revolution in sort of media that we were expecting the internet to give us? I mean, really?
Yeah, and you know, here's what's cool. There's a mathematician who went all the way through graduate school, got a PhD in mathematics, who knows how to use symbols that only look like, you know, the ancient linear B squiggles to me.
Exactly. It looks like hieroglyphics.
Right. That encompass entire universal concepts, and Google's got him in a basement, a windowless basement somewhere, saying, figure out what we're going to sell Bob that has to do with the word lunch.
Exactly. It's really kind of sad. I mean, I'm actually working with a couple of, I would call them kids, young adults from at Carnegie Mellon University. And these kids, same thing, right? I mean, the kids are really bright, really smart. But this is the kind of stuff, you know, you just want to protect, you want to sort of protect them from themselves, right? Like, do you really want to go work for Google where this is what you're going to be suggesting is bento lunch boxes to people because the word lunch is in their email? Really?
This is, yeah. Right, because there's that old line from George C. Scott in the movie Patton, where you remember it starts with him standing in front of the big American flag, and he's got the riding crop and the jodhpurs and the boots and the short jacket, and he says
his second best role.
Yes, right behind.
You know what is behind?
Yeah, General Buck Turgidson.
You got it. Sorry, I digressed.
Ah, baby, we can fly one of those things in real low. Yeah, and I'll mention again that my voice coach at the University of Alabama was the guy who voice coached him for Dr. Strangelove, with greatness. And he's standing there and he says, well, no matter what happens, at least you can say I didn't shovel shit in Louisiana. And that's what that guy who's hooking up bento boxes advertisements with my email talking to Dr. Bill about where to do lunch, that's what that he's shoveling in Louisiana.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're constantly told, Scott, that we have, don't let your children go into the social sciences. For God's sakes, don't let them be English majors. They've got to be mathematicians and computer geniuses in the new economy. And so we do.
Okay, because they can solve the world's most important problems.
Yeah. My need for
Wall Street. Or, you know, where the fact that they know what a triple derivative is actually a bad thing. Or they can go to, you know, they can go to Google. The example is just too funny.
Yeah, Granddad, what did you do for a living? I changed the world by selling Bob Kincaid a lunchbox he didn't need.
Yeah. I think this is the funny thing, though. This is the view. It's the view of progress, right? I mean, is this. So this is from our project's perspective, you know, we've been through the phase where you can go to Google and you can type something in and you can say, you know, here's page one of 1.6 million hits found in 0.16 seconds, right? You're like, wow, that's impressive, right? And then you look at it like, what the heck is all this stuff? Right? It's just a torrent of, it's like the fire hose. You're just like, you know, drinking water from the fire hose. And I think that what I'm hoping is that people, same thing with the news, right, with the media, that people actually realize that there are some good quality, small sources of media where people are actually doing the journalist's job, not just what's easy and fast and cheap and can be rolled out like sausage, but considered and considerate, and that it doesn't take a bazillion dollars to run an organization like that, but it does take something, and you can't run it for free, right?
I'll be happy to testify to that.
No, it's absolutely right, right? I mean, this is a perfect example. What you're doing is the perfect example of that, and I think what we have to do, and I want to talk about Pittsburgh, too. I have to talk about Pittsburgh.
Okay.
What I see is people starting to say, well, wait a minute, you know, maybe these tools are actually going to be useful for us to get together in small groups and help each other, you know, get some quality information out there. It's true. Google is going to still be the fire hose and everyone's going to use that, but it's free and whatever. But I think that I hate to call it a niche, but, you know, the fact that you've got a community that you've created at the Horn where people actually want to hear the stuff that they're not hearing, they want to discuss it. They want to hear other people's viewpoints on it. Is a trend that I'm hoping is sort of like the bees sharing the information with each other, right? Like, yeah, you know, if we actually work together a little bit, we can actually provide something that's pretty valuable, as opposed to just as much stuff as we can dump on your head, completely undifferentiated. Right? So I think that's I'm hoping that that's the way it goes, and that's why. That's one of the reasons I call, right? Because it's like voting with your feet. You got to be part of the community. And so I think that's
absolutely
important thing for all of us to do. Hey, let's talk about Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So you know that Linda's from Pittsburgh.
Yes, that's right.
And so you're going to Pittsburgh. You're definitely going, right?
We're, like I said, if I have to hitchhike.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, we'll drive you, right? We'll
okay.
And then I'll pick you up and take you there.
Okay.
So, do you know Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I do. I do know Pittsburgh some. When I was a carefree and carefree fraternity boy at West Virginia University.
Yeah. Okay.
I just
okay.
happened to be affiliated with the fraternity chapter that had all the Pittsburgh guys in it.
Okay.
So I know some Pittsburgh.
All right. So So let me just first say, Stanley Cup champions, just completely awesome.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it is a town ruled by two towels, a gold one and a white one.
And a white one. But let's talk about where you need to go. And you probably already know these places already. Okay, so you're going to get there, right? And someone's going to tell you you have to go to Permanis.
Yes.
Right? You've been to Permanis?
More times than I can count.
Okay, all right. So you've explained to the Horn audience the sort of revolution that the Permanis sandwich is, right?
I think I've touched on it, but yeah, it's this beautiful vinaigrette slaw, and they put the French fries on the sandwich.
On the sandwich, right? You can normally get a sandwich with the slaw and the fries on the side, not at Permanis.
No.
The whole thing is the sandwich, right? It's just ridiculous, okay?
And this beautiful Italian thick-sliced bread, yes.
Yeah. And so Permanis is one of those things that everyone tells you you have to do. Now, we were surprised over the last few years to see Permanis actually become like a franchise.
Yeah, I think you can get a Permanis Brothers sandwich in the Pittsburgh Pirates ballpark now.
Yeah. And out at the mall and some other places, right? So, you know, you've had Permanis, so you're good. Okay, so have you been to Tassaro's?
No.
Okay, all right. So you eat meat, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
And more importantly, Guy James is going to be with us, and Guy James eats only meat. Okay.
All right.
Well, no fish, no shrimp, no chicken. So.
Okay. So, the Tassaro's is known for two things. One, they have this incredible, like open pit barbecue grill thing that they do, and they have a dish on there that Guy's going to love. It's called the Barnyard Special. And it's like one of everything. It does actually have chicken on it. One of the best things they have is this, is their barbecued half chicken. And it's just killer, right? But then you get this, and remember, I'm a vegetarian.
Yes.
So I'm talking about the days when we used to eat meat.
Right.
And oh man. you get this pork chop, right? The thing's like 2 inches thick. No kidding, right? And it's cooked over mesquite grill, done perfectly, right? And you get the barbecued half chicken. It's just, like, ridiculous. So that's the one. So Tassaro's is a great place to go because it's got, it's not the traditional, but not Permanis. It's not the one of the places that everybody knows. It's in Bloomfield, which is, where's the conference? It's downtown somewhere.
Yeah, it's downtown.
Downtown. It's downtown, yeah. So it's pretty easy to get to Bloomfield from downtown. So you can go to start. The other thing they have is they have the world's best, and I know this is saying a lot, they have the world's best Bloody Marys.
Ooh.
And so you get this Bloody Mary, and it's like viscous, right? I mean, it's big, and it's got lots of horseradish in it and lots of pepper and huge thing of celery, and I don't know if they put carrots or olives, a whole bunch of olives or whatever. It's like a meal in itself, right?
Mm.
But if you like, you know, if you like the good, spicy kind of, you know.
Yeah.
We're going into our food porn thing.
Yes, we are.
That is, I mean, the Tassaro's is worth it because you're going to come, if you get the Bloody Mary and you get, you know, sort of any of the meat on the thing, especially, you know, you get the Barnyard Special or whatever, you're going to be like, okay, you know, that's good. I've got my protein fix, you know. if I don't make it to Permanis, I'm going to be okay, you know. But definitely check out Tassaro's if you get the chance. It's really, really
Tassaro's.
Yes.
Wow. Am I good?
You are good. You're that good. And people will know it there. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, you go down there, right? And you're like, oh, where do you want to go? Oh, let's go here. Let's go to the O. Let's go to.
Yeah. See, that was next on the list. The O for French fries. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So you know all those places. Right? You know all the places in Oakland.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, not that any of them are great, but some of them are memorable. The O is especially memorable, I think, for late night French fries.
Yeah, the times I experience the O are somewhat difficult to remember for reasons which we shall not go into.
Yeah, exactly. Most people have a hard time remembering it.
But I remember the fries were good.
Yeah, they are good. Yeah, they're like your basic, you know, carnival fries, like fresh cut and fresh, you know, fresh done. They're good. They're real good.
Yeah.
But they're not meat, right? They're not made of meat.
That's true. Right. And Mario's and Blue Lou's, you know,
yep.
The kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Well, those places are, Blue Lou's is, I guess that's newer, actually, right?
Well, it's down on the point.
Yeah, yeah, okay. There's a bunch of good places down there, but I mean, I'm psyched that you're going there because we have connections that Pittsburgh's a great town.
It's one of my favorite cities in America. It really, really is, Scott. My favorite example is the joke about the difference between Philly and Pittsburgh.
What's that?
Well, if you stop a guy on the street in Pittsburgh and you say, "What time is it?" The guy says, "Here, you want a watch?" And you ask a guy in Philly what time it is, and he says, "You, what do I look like, Big Ben? Get a watch."
One of the things I heard this election season was that Pennsylvania is Philadelphia on the East Coast, Pittsburgh on the West Coast,
and Alabama in the middle.
Alabama or something.
And it is so flippin' true.
It's true. When Linda and I drive back from Pittsburgh, and we drive through the middle of the state, you stop there for lunch, it's like, you know, which one of the people in this place has the Volvo station wagon? You know, it's like, well, that would be us.
Yep. Guilty.
Check, please.
Well, and you know, Rick Smith is from Harrisburg, you know, who does the show on, we carry his show on Saturdays and Sundays.
Yep.
And he felt real, the first time he mentioned the Alabama in the middle thing, he felt real bad after I said, yeah, and I'm from Alabama. He thought he was insulting me, but no, it's like, you know, I recognize it. It's Alabama, different accent. That's all.
Same ideas, just in a yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Not a dime's worth of difference. I mean, you know, when the Southern Army, including the 4th and 44th Alabama, marched into Gettysburg, I don't know how they didn't know they were home, except for the you know, the absence of, you know, old Mars and the plantation. But very much so, and we are so excited about the Pittsburgh thing because if we can make it work the way that it's supposed to work, and we've got there will be there's five rooms in the convention center. It is the greenest convention center in the country.
Right.
There's five rooms in the convention center. We will have five separate streams going with capacity for virtually everybody who wants to listen.
Wow, that's cool.
And so everything that happens there can happen live. So people who can't be there can be there. We'll have chat rooms going, everything. The one thing I haven't sorted out yet is how I'm going to monitor five rooms at one time.
Right.
And I don't, but you know.
Don't worry.
Ben Birch is a genius. Ben Birch will tell me how it's going to happen.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's going to be great. I mean, that's.
And there's going to be a mountaintop removal panel there. They were the folks at Netroots Nation were kind enough to include that at my suggestion.
That's great.
They were even working on some other things that are a little bit more difficult, but I think we'll make them pan out too. And of course, the big trick is just getting there. Yeah, but
yeah.
We're gonna be there. And I mean, we've got real ambitions. I'd do video if we had, you know, I'd do video if we had the cameras to do the video with.
Right.
So
no, just go and do your thing. We're looking forward to it. You know, should be really.
And plus, you know, the whole
lens into what's happening.
And plus, it's going to be a lot of fun meeting the other winners of the Democracy for America scholarship competition.
Yeah.
Because I guess there's going to be a little get together, a little dinner, a little cocktail hour, and I'm going to meet some amazing people.
You're in good company. Yeah.
Yeah, very good company. I'm looking forward to meeting all of them, and I've had a couple of nice emails with Pam Poley from out in Kansas, some of these other. We've been on a conference call and stuff, and the beauty of it is so many of the scholarship winners are from places that do not, you know, you would not ordinarily consider to be liberal, but you know, like I was talking with in the conversation with Lee last night.
Yeah.
Knowing that people are there and doing that work means that there will be somebody there to, you know, hold their little hand up when all of this right wing garbage finally crashes all the way to the earth. Gather on me, come this way.
Right. You know, that's, I mean, I thought that was really great last night. That was a really great point. You know that those people are out there. Those people are not being quiet. Right. That's all you got to do. You just got to, you know, do your thing and say, well, you know, there's another way of thinking about what you just said. Right. And knowing that there's people out there, like you said, it's not just this expanse of single-mindedness through various parts of the country. That, you know, it's definitely more complicated than that. People are down there, are all around.
Yeah, and it's a little
middle of Pennsylvania,
right?
Exactly.
Trying
to do their thing, you know?
And it's a little dangerous trying to identify each other to each other. We need some sort of high sign or lodge handshake or something.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you look for the bumper stickers. I go down the road and I see somebody with an I Love Mountains and an Obama bumper sticker. I know, you know, I kind of wave and say, hey, cool. Yeah, give them a thumbs up.
Yeah.
But on the other side, you know, I just finally had to give up and peel off my Obama and I Love Mountains stickers off my truck simply because so many wingnut, redneck, mountaintop removal types had helped me peel it off already. So I got to get new ones.
Yeah.
And I'm also going to... I ordered for myself and for Wayne horn bumper stickers from the horn store, so they're going mm-hmm. on. They're going on too, proudly displayed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that's free speech, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Scott, this has been a wonderful conversation. We run over by a couple of minutes, but
yeah, I see that we did that.
Yeah, please give my kind regards to Linda. I've got oddly enough, I've got her I can see her business card from where I'm speaking right now.
Hey, so I sent you the email with the login information.
Okay.
You're busy?
Yes.
Check it out.
I am going to, and when you're ready to make this thing bust out all over, we want to pull it like a little red wagon.
Excellent. Because I mean, we're part of the same community in this, so we're working for the same cause.
Exactly. Scott, thank you so much, and have a wonderful weekend.
All right, Bob. You too.
Okay. Bye bye.
Good night. Bye now.
Wow, you guys did it again. What a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Bunch of lights still lit up. My sincere apologies. We will have at it on Monday, I promise. Crank it up again. We've run over time, and my apologies to Mike for having done that. For those of you who, most of us do listen to Mike, and I include myself in that. Have a wonderful weekend. Don't forget the Horn weekend schedule. Don't forget the Rick Smith Show and Rick's Place with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. An encore of Billy Shears and Night Sounds coming your way Saturday night and throughout the rerun schedule. Billy is working diligently on bringing a program back. He's been very, very busy, Billy has. On Sunday night, Lord Willen, Dog Willen, Flying Spaghetti Monster Willen, Nothing Willen, John Fox, and all foxed up, and the conversation will renew and begin again. So all of that is in front of you over the weekend. Enjoy yourselves. Stay safe. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org, the hardest working, bravest people I know. Who prove it every day, and you hear about a lot of it right here. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.